Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the By Yahweh's Design conference call for the third day of April, year 2019. I am Commander Dan, your host and chairman for this meeting of the House of Jacob Israel. The agenda for today's call is meet John Mark, our special guest. I will have a co-host with me here shortly, which will be Michael from South Carolina. And we intend to discuss some of the tenets of propertarianism and a little bit about John Mark's journey to get to where he is today. So bear with us. I got a few things here to tell you, and then we'll get right into the meat of the matter. We dedicate this call to our Heavenly Father Yahweh, who is the great I Am. We also dedicate this call to his holy remnant, who are the believing sons and daughters of Jacob, who was later named Israel. Today, these people are known as the Caucasian, or the true Israelite peoples of the world. Hallelujah, which means all praise Yahweh in ancient or Paleo Hebrew. To my Welsh kinsmen across the ocean, Shumai, and welcome to the program, Cumru Ambith. We will not be taking callers tonight, or at least it's not planned to, bear with us on that. If things change, I will certainly make that announcement. Also, have your pens and pencils handy, as I have a feeling there will be a lot of information given out tonight, so please have that handy to jot down things as we go over. One of the things I'd like you to jot down is the website, www.pastordan.net, because that's where we keep the schedule for calls, archives of programs going all the way back to 1999. We also have a lot of health information, links there for that, and education, and also how to learn the identity message, at least the correct identity message. There's some folks out there teaching what they call Christian identity that are sort of off the track, so we like to try to get everybody back on the same path, which we call the path of righteousness or truth. We also say a shout-out to the audiences that are with Bank versus UTV out of Tampa. They will not be able to listen live because Jimmy got himself put into YouTube jail, but they will be able to hear on his rebroadcast of the program. So again, shout out to Jimmy up there in Tampa and his guests and audience at Bank versus UTV. Now, normally I go through a whole lot of things, including some scripture and whatnot, but tonight I'm going to make an exception to that rule, and I'm going to bring our... as soon as I get this software to work right here, I'm going to bring our guest and co-host on with me here in just a second. Okay, John Mark, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yep, sounding very good, loud and clear. And Michael, can you hear me?
Can hear you both, loud and clear.
All right, excellent, excellent. So anyway, folks, this is, you guys know Michael, but John Mark is a first-time guest, and we always put first-timers on the hot seat for a few minutes. I'm going to turn the mic over to him and let him give you a brief intro, and go ahead, John.
Thank you very much, Pastor Dan. Thanks so much for having me, and Mike, great to have you on as well. I know we chatted for a few minutes earlier when we were doing kind of our sound check. Great to meet you and hear a little bit of your journey. Yes, my name is John Mark, and most people know me through my YouTube channel, which is simply John Mark, J-O-H-N-M-A-R-K. If you search for John Mark, Mark My Words, which is kind of the name of my show, you will find me on YouTube. I started my YouTube channel in the very beginning of 2019, maybe late 2018. And it took off fairly quickly, and I think the big reason for that, maybe a couple big reasons, but one is I'm talking a lot about something called propertarianism, which is a fairly new school of thought, and we can get into it a little bit depending on what Pastor Dan would like, but it presents a lot of practical solutions, having to do with the rule of law, practical solutions having to do with government and the design of government. That really are drastic improvements over our system now, which is not a very high bar, obviously. Our system right now is broken. But
yes.
It is a lot of people are just really resonating with it the same way that I resonated with it when I came across it and began to understand it. So that's a big part of it. And so I talk a lot about proprietarianism, and I also just talk a lot about the situation that we're in the United States of America. So we can get into that as well. But that's where most people know me from. I also have a website called johnmarksays.com. And so you can find pretty much everything I do there, links to my YouTube videos and everything. And other than that, I feel like I'm pretty much a regular guy. I mean, fairly successful in business. I'm not a multimillionaire or anything like that. And one thing I don't share with most audiences, but I think it would be pertinent for this audience, is I have I grew up in a very strong Christian home. Parents heavily involved in ministry. I was heavily involved in ministry for the first part of my adult life. Now I've transitioned more into politics. I'm not as much involved in that world, but I have a soft spot in my heart for Christians. You know, the Christian people that I have spent time around have been wonderful, amazing people. And I think that there's some problems, obviously, with Christianity at large, but in general, the people are just top-notch, and the ones that I've interacted with personally over my life. So that's a part of my background that I don't share too much usually because I'm trying to reach a broad audience, but with this audience, I think it's pertinent, so I figured I'd share that as well. But that's me in a nutshell, the Cliff Notes version, Pastor Dan, and great to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. It's my honor. And you can use either Pastor Dan or Commander Dan. If you go back,
sounds good.
If you go back to the Aramaic words that they come from, the same exact word can be translated as leader, commander, or pastor. So it's basically the concept is just somebody that's in charge, whether it's civics or military or theology. It's just the guy who sits in the chairman's chair. So, I know you're modest, but I'm going to tell you, I don't consider you normal in any stretch of the imagination. You are head and shoulders above normal. If we had even 1 out of 1,000 in this country as well read and spoken as you are, the problem would be solved. Unfortunately, in America today, they've dumbed us down to the point that's it just staggering. For somebody of my age who grew up in the 50s, just since the 50s, what they have done in our country, it's sickening. For those of us older folks, to what they have done, it's just amazing. But I got to ask something here real quick before we get into things, and then I'll let Michael ask a question. But I'm always interested in what was your epiphany, and again, I have no idea what your age is, but I'm assuming relatively young, but my audience likes to know this as well, so I'm not the only one, but we're always interested in what was your come to Jesus moment. Just kind of hit you upside the head like with a 2x4 and just woke you up to reality versus the mind-numbing propaganda that we have today?
Oh, I love hearing stories like this from excellent people as well. So mine was the first time I got the common terminology, as your audience probably knows, is red pilled. I've started to get red pilled on certain things. I'm a voracious reader. And I like to consume a lot of information, as obviously you do and your audience probably does as well. So I just read and read and read and read. And so I was just very curious as things began to heat up politically. Obviously, there was some kind of a change. Now, looking back, I can identify it around, well, it's been happening for a long time, but 2011 was a big change, kind of a turning point as well, when the political correctness started to get really crazy. Somewhere around that time, I was just reading, and I started coming across, and I forget exactly where it was at first, but I started coming across these writings by these people that were talking about how women are very different than men. And you would think that growing up in a Christian home that I would be kind of aware of this. And I wasn't like politically correct, like, you know, women are exactly the same as men, that type of thing. But I had just been taught through the propaganda, as you say, that women are basically the same as men. And, you know, obviously they're different physically. So I started coming across these writings, and they're researching, they're talking about research and scientific studies and different things. And I started realizing, wow, women are actually very, very different than men on average, of course, in their psychology. And so I got red-pilled, you could say, on gender differences. And I realized, okay, I've been lied to about this, and it actually hasn't been very helpful to me. It was not helpful to me when I was younger with women. It was not helpful to me in my marriage. And when I got my head straight on that, and then, of course, looking back, I could look in the Bible as well and see, okay, yeah, you know, the Bible lines up with this. But it's just that the preachers I had been around didn't really teach about it that much. And so that was one thing. The other thing was, is I set about to try to figure out how money works. And I was watching CNBC and Fox Business for hours and hours, and I was like, what is it that they are not telling me? There is something I am missing. And I eventually figured out that what they're not talking about in plain language is how money comes into existence. And so once I realized how that works, and I realized that banking, the lending aspect of banking is basically a scam. They're bringing money into existence out of nothing and charging interest on it. Then I was like, oh, wow, I have really been lied to on a massive scale. And once that starts to happen, you realize the scale to which you've been lied to, then you're much more open to learning more things, and it grows from there. So that was really the first two big instances for me.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned reading. I've been an avid reader ever since I was in about the fifth grade, 10 years old. Some of the most fun I had, I remember, is when the teacher used to hand us a slip of paper, and it had these list of books you could order. Of course, when you checkmarked them, you had to take it home and get mom and dad to give you the money for them. But my mom and dad, they were farmers, and my dad was an electrician in a plant. But they didn't have a lot of money growing up, but they'd always make sure there was enough to buy me any books I wanted. And some of the most fun was when a week or so later when the books came in and she would hand them out, and I'd have this stack of five or six books to take home and start reading. It's just, I just don't understand why people today don't read more. I mean, even if you want to read Kindle and flat screens, just read, read, folks. I mean,
yeah.
Right now, and this is no lie, I've got 8 books on my nightstand by my bed, and I'm reading 1 to 2, 3 chapters in 2 or 3 of them every night before I go turn the light out. I multitask. That's one of the things I'm bad at. I'll start a book, and then another good book comes, and I just got to start it. And so now I'm in the middle of 3, 4, 5, 6 books. So it's, you know. But yeah. It's interesting that reading, because our enemy has taken our society to the point, and I've got family this way, so I'm not trying to throw stones, but most people just don't want to read anymore. I don't understand it. They just don't seem to get anything from it, but it does seem to be that the guys that seem to be the sharpest, and again, this is a generality here, but the guys that seem to be on top of things the most are the guys that still know how to read, and some of the gals too, but I'm particularly trying to get the men to wake up because, and I'll see if you and Michael agree, but it seems to me that particularly the white male is the focus of all denigration today. All the efforts are to suppress the white male. And my biblical theology side of things is because we are the sons of the Most High, the Adamites in Scripture, and it's going to be our job at some point, according to Obadiah and Ezekiel, at some point we're going to set this all straight. The sons of Yahweh or God are going to set this all straight. And the enemy knows that. And so they focus a lot of this negativity and suppression on our guys. And so my main focus is towards lifting up the white male in our society today. So just so you understand a little bit from where I'm coming from, I want truth and honesty and justice for every single person out there. We don't hold that against anybody. Every person walking on this earth has a God-given right to life, liberty, and property. But the white male is my main focus because he is the most downtrodden of people on this earth today. As far as I'm concerned, he's got everything piling on top of him. So, but anyway, that was interesting. So reading, but let me get, in case Michael's had something you wanted to add in here. Michael, did you have anything, bud?
Well, this is a perfect segue to what was going to be my first question for John, John Mark. So on almost all of your videos, if not all of them, you say at the end, how many more times will the right have to fight this battle? And I find that fascinating. So this, and Dan can confirm this, and all of our listeners can confirm this, I talk about this all the time, how the people, meaning our people, have done this over and over and over again throughout civilization. Even if you go back to the Vedic text, there's no doubt that these people who wrote this stuff in Sanskrit and talked about how, hey, the people, meaning us, just as the founders of this nation said, we the people, they were describing a demographic group. Not everybody that happened to be standing on the same patch of dirt, but there was a certain demographic group that, hey, we built this civilization because we wanted our progeny, our people, to have all the advantages of that civilization. And then what happens? Well, because this civilization built by our people is typically abundant and has great prosperity and wealth, others who, and keep me honest, John Mark, you refer to them as the parasites, of any group show up, and they want the benefits of that civilization that we built for our progeny to enjoy it, and it falls apart somehow. So I guess that's my long-winded way of asking, how did you stumble upon this concept of, hey, how many more times is this going to happen? How many more times are our people going to build a civilization, have parasites just, you know, steal it from us and wreck it? And now there's a way that we'll never have to do this again. That's the most fascinating thing I find from all your videos.
Yeah, and I'm glad you're bringing that up, because that's something that hasn't really come up in many of the interviews that I've done. So I'm really glad that you're bringing it up. And this, this really is 30,000 foot view. The big message is, we now know, we know the game. This, as you guys are saying, this is a very ancient battle. This is not a new thing, left versus right. These are two instincts that go way, way back. And you can talk about it as you guys are doing from like the Christian identity perspective. And just so you guys are aware, I'm somewhat familiar with that, and I'm not an expert on it, so I'm not going to try to weigh in on it. But you could talk about it from that perspective. You could talk about it from, as Kurt Doolittle, the originator of proprietarianism, does, from a like a historical, I guess you could say, psychological perspective, and how these different civilizations developed and why they developed, and why white people of Western European descent specifically are so unique with the level of prosperity and the institutions we've been able to build, and different things. So you guys are absolutely right. This is a very ancient battle. It's not a new thing. And so, as I say in my videos, as you mentioned, Mike, how many more times are we going to do this? Now, the thing I like to say and point out is, before roundabout now, you know, maybe the last 5, 10, 15 years or so, we really did not, not enough people on the grassroots right wing really understood why what is happening to us is happening to us, if that makes sense. We know we don't like it. We know it's not good. We know it's not good that white men are being denigrated and demonized, and that all the world's problems are being blamed on them falsely, et cetera. But why is this happening? You know, the big question is, how can we fix it? So that's what I find with proprietarianism, is it provides both an explanation for a person, even that's not a Christian, you know, they can look historically and see, okay, this is why this is happening. And as I explain in some of my videos, this is the psychology that's happening in many of these non-white people, most of them statistically, that's causing them to buy into this anti-white identity politics. This is why these people act the way they do. This is why they are parasites. And so then that enables us, once we understand the why and the mechanism of it, then we can apply a solution. And proprietarianism is the most complete solution that I've found. So I won't get into the details right this second, but that's the 30,000-foot view, is we now understand this whole battle that's been going on for a long, long time. We understand it better than we ever have before. We understand the mistakes we made in the 20th century. We got blindsided by some things, and now we know how to fix it. And so once we can regain power, we have the opportunity to institute something that is going to make it so our descendants don't have to keep doing this over and over again, if that makes sense. So I'm really glad you brought that up, Mike.
It does, and that's the segue to my second question. Whereas you have so many libertarians that have shined the light on the fact that I think there's even a book called The Constitution The God That Failed, in that even the libertarians realize that there are too many gaping holes in the Constitution, the founding documents of these United States. So where would the propertarianism or a propertarian constitution seal up those holes that would prevent what has happened here? In other words, for constitutional scholars, the Commerce Clause has given the government of the United States the ability to do anything they want, and all they have to do is just justify it to regulate commerce. Where would a propertarian constitution prevent those kinds of things from happening?
Yeah, that's a great question, and another big thing I'm really glad you brought up, because sometimes you'll hear people say, we just need to go back to the original Constitution. I'm sure you guys have heard that, right?
Yes.
We just need to get back to the original Constitution. You hear that a lot, and my immediate point to that is, if it would have been good enough, we wouldn't be where we are. And so it's not like it was terrible. It was good for its time, and the founding fathers did pretty well with what they knew, but for one thing, we've dismantled it in various ways. For another thing, it just was not good enough from the beginning. It wasn't complete enough. So one of the things that Kurt Doolittle, the originator of propertarianism, is doing is he's actually writing a new and improved constitution. Obviously, it keeps, the good parts or the good concepts from the original one, but it needs to be much more precise. It can't have these things, like you're saying, like the Commerce Clause, and just give them an excuse to do whatever. The legal language has to be extremely, extremely thorough and extremely precise and accurate. And so 30,000 foot view, what the Constitution needs to do is it needs to set in place rule of law that is so clear that it cannot be misinterpreted. And what that rule of law needs to do is it needs to do one simple thing, which is enforce reciprocity. And you can get into the definition of reciprocity, which we have in propertarianism. But basically, the bottom line is when reciprocity is violated in any kind of a human interaction, you get a retaliation cycle that starts. And that's what we're seeing in America right now, is there are so many violations of reciprocity. There's so much parasitism. I use parasitism as a synonym for violations of reciprocity. There's so much being done to the people that is being parasitic upon the people. There's so many violations of reciprocity being allowed by our current system of rule of law and our current system of government. Our current system of government is literally the industrialization of parasitism. This whole buying of politicians that's allowed and all this. So propertarianism would fix all that, but it has to be very thorough. And basically what it does is it returns the judiciary to doing one simple thing, which is enforcing reciprocity. If you try to violate reciprocity in any way, shape, or form, if you try to be a parasite, you're going to get in trouble under propertarian rule of law, and it has to be very thorough, very specific, et cetera. That one concept fixes it, basically. And so once you learn to think in that manner, you start to see it everywhere.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry I stepped on you. Could you give us the Reader's Digest of what, in your terms, reciprocity is? Because there is actually a biblical term translated as restitution, meaning like the natural concept of you kill my cow, you have to restore it with a cow plus something else. Contract yes. law, all agreements must have, what do they call it, performance or consideration, meaning I paint your house, you give me a purse of gold, coins. Mm-hmm. And what we have in the United States and most white Western civilization, white Western countries, is a scenario where the state steals the property of producers and without any performance grants it to the parasite. So that's a violation of natural law right there. There's no performance required.
Yes. And I'm glad you mentioned the word natural law or the term natural law as well. In proprietarianism, we basically use that term as synonymous with reciprocity. We often use the whole phrase natural law of reciprocity. And so that Bible verse you pointed out matches up perfectly with the definition of reciprocity that we use, which has several elements to it. So I'll just read them off really quickly. But warranted is one of them. Every transaction or interaction between individuals, groups, whatever the case may be, has to be warranted. In other words, you can't just take something of mine without restitution. Or if you somehow hurt me, you have to provide restitution. It's the exact same concept. It's the same concept as a warranty on a product, right? Or if Chevrolet puts out vehicles with faulty brakes and they start, you know, getting into crashes and hurting people, they have to fix that, right? And they can be sued. There's restitution that has to be provided. They can't just, you know, cut corners on the cost of their brakes and who cares who gets hurt, right? So there has to be reciprocity. There has to be restitution. There has to be warranty is the term that we use. So the definition we have of reciprocity is the interaction has to be fully informed. In other words, neither side can be lying or lying by omission. It has to be voluntary. It can't be forced, you know, one side on the other. It has to be warranted, as we just talked about, free of negative externality, which is a fancy way of saying it can't have negative effects on somebody else that's not party to the transaction. So in other words, if a company does a deal with some politicians and they can just throw their waste in a river wherever they want to save costs, well, that has a negative externality, a bad effect on whoever it lives near that river, right? So that would be a violation of reciprocity. So you have to take into account that it's not harming anybody else as well. And it has to be productive. In other words, there has to be a benefit for both parties. It can't just be a benefit for one and not a benefit or a harm to the other. So if you think about it, it's all really very common sense. It's not really rocket science, but the trick is to get your judiciary, instead of doing all this fancy interpretation stuff that gives them the excuse to be parasites and do whatever they want to do, just to force your rule of law into to where the judiciary is just enforcing reciprocity and deciding, does this violate reciprocity or not? If it does violate it, there's restitution that has to be performed.
Amazing. Do you see why Daniel and I are so impressed with you? I'm not going to try to guess how old you are, but I was at the Mises University cohort in 2013, and I, believe me, I'm never the smartest guy in the room, and I addressed these very points with many of the libertarian scholars, Lou Rockwell, Dr. Tom Woods, Bob Higgs, I mean, the entire list of chair people were speaking, and there was one gap, and one thing that I wanted to bring up here. Is proprietarianism all about commerce and property, or is there an element of, hey, what about your people? Because if we take that 30,000-foot view, and I don't know if Kurt Doolittle talks about this, but again, why are we doing all this? Why are we... You know, why do we have power plants, and why do we, have, fresh running water and sanitation and farms and schools and universities? The purpose of a civilization is to advance the condition of your people, right? Make things better for your people. Mm-hmm. Make the next generation. I'll even use the term eugenics. Two beautiful, smart people find each other and get married, and then, heaven forbid, the next generation is bigger and taller and stronger and smarter, and they develop greater technologies. And if everything is about economy, I think that's where the others, and I'll say that in triple parentheses, they cause guys like us to get off on the wrong track and open our borders, because, hey, as long as somebody, regardless of whether there are people or not, as long as they have the same ideas about seeking wealth and building big businesses and what have you, let's bring them and all their people in. And that's where I think libertarianism falls short, because I would always say, what about your people, though? If the purpose of doing all this is to elevate the condition of your people, why are we having all these others in our country parasiting off of our civilization. And even if they're not parasites, if they're others, there are people who maybe we don't want in our territory because they're not our people. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, and very well put, and I'm really glad you brought it up because that was, I keep saying that because you're asking great questions. I keep saying I'm really glad you brought this up, but that's the next thing I was going to try to point out and point the conversation towards, which is absolutely, it's about the people, and one of the biggest things, one of the biggest aspects of proprietarianism, the reason it has the name proprietarianism, which, by the way, we go back and forth, is this really the right name for it? But that's the name it has now, so we're stuck with it. But in any case, the reason that that is in the name is the word property. And so one of the huge features of proprietarianism is a much broader definition of property than, for example, libertarianism would have, or that our current rule of law has, which is basically just physical stuff and maybe some intellectual property. The definition of property in proprietarianism is that which a person or a group has invested in, that they've demonstrated willingness to defend it, and they did not obtain it by imposing costs on somebody else or by being a parasite on somebody else. So in other words, I can't just walk into your house and, you know, take your refrigerator and say, well, I'm defending it now and I invested in it by putting the effort in to steal it. So, you know, now it's my property. No, you can't get it by parasitism. So with that three-part definition, that's a much, much broader definition. So what falls into that definition of property is things like commonly owned property, which, as you were talking about, we could consider our genes to be commonly owned property. For example, it could be something intangible like, you know, a religion, religious beliefs, or values that we have. And so when you realize, and the attempt of this definition of property is not just for us to sit here and say, well, this is what we think it is. If you think empirically, if you just observe how people act, you will see that they treat all sorts of things as property that are not physical stuff. And you talked about one of the main ones right there. And so the proprietarian definition of property that would be used in rule of law would be this broader definition of property. So people would have recourse through rule of law to defend these things that we value. And this is a big problem for us as right-wingers because we value so many of these things that are so valuable to our civilization, especially in the long run. And there's no way, we have no recourse in our current system to defend it. Whereas if you have a broader, accurate, empirical definition of property, then you suddenly have recourse to defend it, and you're not stuck with this thing like, man, we're like headed for a civil war here because they're just being parasites on all these things that we value, and we have no recourse for defending it. So,
including our people, right?
Including
our people. Our blood.
Kurt Doolittle says this all the time. He says, really, the purpose of our civilization is the production of, if I can get the quote right, something to the effect of, the purpose of our civilization, the purpose of what we're doing is the production of intergenerational families where each generation is more successful than the next. It's our people. That's the whole point.
And isn't that what a nation
exactly
is?
Right.
And yes. You know this from your missionary and biblical studies growing up, and our listeners all have this belief system, that a nation is really just a family grown large. And when you have a very successful family, maybe you move to Florida and you know, I moved to Washington State. That seems to be something about our people that we've lost, whether it was learned or taught or impressed upon us, or it's just a natural occurrence because of our, I think, our innate sympathy and empathy and desire to be helpful for other people. Mm-hmm. But we get to the point where we do build up this genetic and financial and land wealth, and then we say, oh, well, we have a lot. Let's just share. Or it's mean mm-hmm. to say that people shouldn't breed with other races, or it's mean to not let a poor person come and live on your land. And then the next thing you know, as you've so eloquently demonstrated on your videos, the next thing we know, we're worried that whether we'll win an election in our own nations anymore.
Mm. Yes, that's exactly right.
It's scary.
Exactly right. Yes. And I just want to throw in one other quick thing, and just a couple of Bible passages that come to mind where we see this. And I'm not saying this amounts to a hard and fast rule where people can't move around at all or anything, but I think of where the Tower of Babel, right? The story in the Bible where God said, okay, we're going to put these different people of different languages in different places. And then also in the book of Acts, there's a verse, if I remember correctly, that says something to the effect of God put different people groups in different places. And we can go even without the Bible, we can go empirically. It's very easy to demonstrate that the easiest way to have the maximum amount of peace on this planet is to keep the different ethnic groups in their own physical geographical locations without all that much intermixing. So absolutely right. Spot on.
Homogeneous nations are the highest trust and most peaceful nations.
Yes. Yes. And a good example of that is Iceland.
Mm. Exactly.
Yes.
And John Mark, again, we don't want to offend anybody. We know what our belief system is, but look at the commandment that talks about adultery. How come it doesn't say thou shalt not commit infidelity? What is it when you adulterate something? You mix it. You make it impure. So we believe, it's part of our belief system, that the Almighty says that you should have babies with your own kind. I made you that way, and it's a violation of natural law to admix peoples that were never intended to be together. And who are we to question in our minds the Almighty? And look at the chaos that we have, because of it.
There's empirical evidence for that as well. I mean, the Greek word mukesus is used in the Septuagint for what we call adultery today, and it means don't mongrelize. And now we found out that when you mongrelize plants, animals, people, it creates all kinds of problems. I'm a naturopath, and you get into organics, you find out that a hybrid seed tomato, you got to eat 7 of them to get the nutrients in one organic tomato. Okay? My sister has 7 dogs, or at least she did have. The mom and the dad had 5 pups. She ended up keeping them all. So right there was one control group, and the mom and dad were separate species of dog. Well, every one of those pups has a problem. One of them has a spinal problem so bad it can barely move its back legs. Another one has allergies that are terrible. Another one has stomach problems. I mean, she's spending a fortune at the vet. And I said to her, I said, well, why did you let that female and that male mate? Well, what do you mean? Is there a problem? And I said, yeah, you're not supposed to do that. And I got into a discussion with some ranchers up in Michigan when I lived up there, and at first they were arguing with me that, oh, no, we're making a better breed by interbreeding these cattle. I said, you're violating the law. I said, you can't make better cattle than God can make. I'm sorry, but you can't. You think you're smart, but you're not. And then after about a 10-minute of discussion with this guy, he looked at me and he goes, well, you know, it is kind of strange because when we mix the two cows, the bull and the heifer of a different a strain of cattle, we have to spend all night in the field waiting for the heifer to deliver that calf. And I said, well, why do you do that? I grew up on a farm. We didn't do that. And he said, well, because if we're not there at the time that calf is brought forth to assist the heifer, we'll lose the calf because of complications. I said, so right there, you're telling me nature has just told you made a violation, and because of that, this cow could very possibly lose its calf because you violated the tenets of Scripture, which says kind after kind.
Right. And go ahead, John.
Go ahead, Mike. Oh, yeah, I was just going to throw in, I'm seeing 3 layers here as you guys are talking of problems with this. You guys are talking about a physical layer, and I would add that, you know, if you have, say, you know, a black person and a white person, and I'm not going to try to speak from a biblical perspective because I'm not an expert on this from the Bible, but just in a practical perspective, you have a black person and a white person that have a baby. That baby is kind of neither, right? So I'm not saying if there's a person that's mixed race that they're a terrible person. They obviously didn't choose that. But you're destroying the genes of one, of both groups, actually, in a sense,
right?
You could say. So that's the physical. You also have the practical, which let's go with the practical next, which is you have different groups, and as one of you pointed out earlier, people are very white people of Western European descent are by far the least ethnocentric group of people on the planet. Everybody else is 100% proudly ethnocentric, and they would never dream of being any other way. And so when you have different groups of people that are naturally ethnocentric, that's a natural defense mechanism, actually, so that you know who's in your group, who you're more likely to be able to trust, and you try to mix everybody together, then different groups start to compete on the basis of race, because that's what we're literally designed to do, is to look out for our family, right, for our race, which is our extended family. So that's the practical. And then you have the psychological, which kind of relates to that as well, which, as you pointed out, Mike, I wanted to make sure to bring this out too, which is when you have all these millions and millions of non-white people coming to America, it's not like they're all bad people, but 70% of them vote Democrat. Why do 70% of them vote Democrat? Because they're falling into this identity politics. Why do they fall into the identity politics? Because of racial, you know, insecurity or solidarity or whatever it is. It's just a natural, normal human thing. So there's all sorts of mistakes being made when we do mixing at a mass scale, I'll put it that way. That's what I just wanted to throw in.
Right. And getting back to my point about nations, when you see the result that a family produces and that family grows much larger, again, Dan and I always reference a book by Dr. Charles Murray, Human Accomplishment. 97% of human accomplishment in every area, every discipline of life has been attributed to white Europeans. And that was decided by a very mixed and diverse panel of experts in all of these disciplines. And there's no arguing it. That's why he gets shouted down every time he wants to go to an Ivy League university to speak. But
they
the point
can't argue
being,
against it, exactly. Yep.
That's right. That's right. The double-blind controlled study that is human history has shown it over and over and over again. Wherever this people go, whether it's the frozen Arctic or the jungles or the Caribbean islands or the Midwest, we produce wonderful things in every area: art, science, literature, architecture, food production. I mean, we've literally fed the world for decades now. Mm. And I'm on my soapbox again, but what's so strange to me is that it happens, as you've said in your video, over and over and over again. We build these incredible things, and then everybody wants it. Some people, wink, winks, say the Gibbs meatats show up and say that the only reason that the white European man has achieved these things is because he's put others down. Well, let me ask a question then. Let's quote, I can't think of the artist right now, cultural appropriation. Okay, stop using our electric power. Stop using our invention of the toilet. Stop using our university systems. Stop using our cars, our highways, our airplanes, our food production, our electric lights, our refrigeration, our heat, our air conditioning, every single thing that you people are utilizing to make your lives better, that we develop to make civilization better for our people, stop using them and develop them yourselves. They can't. Yeah. They can't. That's why these parasites want to be in our nations. And I'll throw it out there too. There are parasites that are our people as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just people of other races or ethnicities. Our people become parasites as well. The mom and dad that each came from a parasitical family breed, and the genes that cause those people you know, nature and nurture, to want to be parasites, and then get over in this giving nation, they end up having children and far too many children that they can't support, so they're parasites as well. So I guess I'm going off on a tangent here, but how does a propertarian civilization deal with people who come in that are parasites?
It gives us recourse to say, no, you can't. Yeah, it gives us legal recourse to say, no, you can't come in, which we don't have right now. Because, you know, we're accused, if we say, no, you can't come in, we're accused of being, oh, you're just evil, you're just mean, or whatever. And that's because we're not operating from a mental paradigm of a full definition of property, that there's a lot more things that we value. Like these big corporate fat cats that want to bring these people in for cheap labor, and because their profit goes up, because it's just more warm bodies to buy stuff, they can make an argument for it. Look, GDP is going up. It's great for the economy. Well, they're cherry picking. See, they're only looking at one form of property, which they like, and they're not looking at all these other forms of property that we value. And what it's doing is, as you were thinking, this was coming to my mind, it's destroying the trust in our nation. We don't trust each other anymore. If you go back even to the 1950s, we were a much higher trust nation. If you think of like the Andy Griffith Show as kind of a fictional representation, but that wasn't really too far from reality in a lot of neighborhoods. And so we white people of Western European descent, for very interesting historical reasons, produced the highest trust civilization on Earth. And that is the number one reason for our success on a practical level. When you have high trust, you can cooperate. If you go to third world countries, it is not a high trust environment. It's a very corrupt environment. Everybody's trying to stab each other in the back and screw each other over any chance they get. You can't build anything great in that environment. You're not going to have a first world nation without building high trust. So what is being done to our nation where the trust is being destroyed, this is a cardinal sin. It's terrible. We cannot allow it. And that's really our secret, is we built a high trust civilization. So what propertarianism does is it restores the trust. And that's why we say that reciprocity is is empirical morality. Because the only way to get a high trust society is to enforce reciprocity. In other words, to have really good rule of law. And so amazing. We haven't done it perfectly. We've done it really way better than most people. But we're obviously failing big time now. But still, we're way better than most places in the world. But that's it. I mean, we got to enforce the reciprocity so we can have high trust. And if you have high trust, you're going to have a high quality of life for your people.
Real quick, John Mark, I want people to know your website is jam-packed with stuff. In fact, I was amazed at your library. It's just full of stuff. And I've been an avid reader since grade school, and you have a ton of stuff I've never even heard of. So
you're talking about propertarianism.com, right? I think that's what you're talking about. Yes. If you go to propertarianism.com and just search for the reading list, I think is what they call it, what we call it on there. That's, I think, what you're referring to, right?
Yeah, there's the reading list, but there's also the Propertarianism Library that's hosted off of Mega out of New Zealand.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. You guys have a lifetime worth of material. The one book I've already downloaded is The Ethnic Origin of Nations, which should be a good read. But tell people real quick about your websites and your YouTube channel, because as Mike has stated, and quite accurately, you're razor sharp. You guys are razor sharp. And some of the best videos really tickles me that guys like you and Asa Lagos and Project Veritas and Florida Maquis and all these guys are putting out these absolutely phenomenal videos that are covering this stuff that nobody wants to talk about, real history, historicity, instead of the made-up propaganda history that they pump through the education system. But real quick, just tell them again for the folks that are joining us, because the numbers keep going up on how many are listening in, but just tell them your websites and your YouTube channel.
Absolutely. My YouTube channel is John Mark, JohnMark. If you search John Mark, Mark My Words, it will come up. And so two things I always suggest to people. Number one, just go watch my videos. They're created for the average person. to be able to understand, speaking in pretty plain language. Then I also suggest you go to propertarianism.com. I have a website as well. It's just johnmarksays.com. But propertarianism.com has a lot of writing on it, mostly by Kurt Doolittle, who's a brilliant, brilliant man. It has the reading list that Pastor Dan was just referring to, so you can search for the reading list. A lot of it is, as he said, free, hosted on a server somewhere that you can go get. But there's just a lot of writing on there. And if you're a person like me that enjoys reading and learning, you will definitely want to go check out propertarianism.com and just start reading through the different topics. And you'll start to get a really, for me, it gave me a much better grasp of, as you were saying, the historicity. What actually happened? Mm. Why? What's the secret of Western civilization success? Why have we been losing in the 20th century? How do we fix it? All of this. So fascinating, fascinating stuff.
Mm. May I bring up a topic? It's going to sound like semantics, but you touched on a little bit the difference between ill-gotten gain and property. And the reason I ask this is one of the little light bulbs that went over my head when, again, I was at the Mises Institute, and I would ask, isn't it funny now that so many of the natural resources, the raw materials of production, the materials that a civilization needs, are in the hands of so few? It's a time now that more wealth is in the hands of so few people than has ever happened in the history of mankind. Well, isn't it funny now that when these few families and our adversaries have gotten their hands by, let's just say, I'll just call it theft and connivory and crony capitalism, they've gotten their hands on all of the means of production and all the natural resources. Now all of a sudden they want no regulation. Now all of a sudden they're pushing libertarianism, which would mean that the state, our people, wouldn't be able to say, hey, whoa, wait a second. It would be like playing a game of Monopoly where the banker had all the money, had Boardwalk Park Plays and all the utilities, and then said, okay, let's have no rules now, okay? Of course they want that. Of course they want no regulation now. Mm. They're this close. I've got my fingers like a millimeter apart from each other. They're this close to having a world that it would literally be a prison planet. And I think, via the Kalergi plan and a lot of other evidence, they're trying to get rid of us. We're their only adversaries. And if they can get rid of us, the rest of the world that will be left is some coffee-colored race of slaves.
Mm. Absolutely. I think you're spot on. They know that the grassroots right in America is their last enemy to overcome. They know this. And that's why I say we're the last stand. And the rest of humanity really has no hope if we don't make a stand and win against these people. And you're exactly right. I love the point you're making about the people at the top of the pyramid. Now, as far as I know, it's not possible to have a society where you don't have some kind of a pyramid structure where some people are going to have more than others, because really the only way you can organize an organization at scale is to have a smaller number of people making more of the decisions for a larger number of the people and organizing the larger numbers, if that makes sense. So that's not all pure evil to have a merit hierarchy, right? But what you're pointing out, which is absolutely true, is that they are now getting so parasitic. And the way I like to put it is this: the middle class people are the ones that have to have the reins of power. They have to be the ones that govern, because middle class people are the only people, and of course this is an overgeneralization, but when I say middle class, I mean from working class up to upper middle class to maybe the lower reaches of the wealthy. But that segment of people, on average, is the only group of people that really primarily makes their living and gets maximum benefit for their lives by being honest. The top of society is parasitic because they can, and so they just do it because they can. And the bottom of society doesn't have much ability many times, not always, but most of them are not very high ability individuals. And so they want to be parasitic because they're not going to get very far on their own merits. And so if you let either of those groups or both of them, which is what's happening now, parasite on the middle, what you see is what we're seeing now in America, which is the middle class is getting slowly eaten away, and it's now not even slow anymore. And it gets down to where it's like these third world countries where you have a tiny number of people that have everything and hardly anybody else has anything, and there's a very small middle class. So that's why we have to resist exactly what we're talking about, the parasitism at the top and the parasitism at the bottom. And the way we do that is with good rule of law.
So question about your feelings when you see like what's going on in Venezuela. American and Western, and let's just say the others who are the banking class and the financial class, who want to get their hands on the natural resources of a sovereign nation like Venezuela, who's one of the founding members of OPEC, by the way. The others who own the Western media try to paint these people as some backwatered, hick, third world goobers who don't understand anything. And if they were smart, they would do things the way America does. Well, the natural resources of the people who live on the land shouldn't be owned by private corporations. Those are the assets of the people. And just as you've said, the property of a nation is really just the property of a big extended family. And when people who are not the people try to steal the oil and other rare earth minerals from Venezuela, our media, the Western media, portrays them as communists or socialists. Well, you've got a brave man, regardless of what you think about him, who's stepping up and facing off against the bullies of the world, saying, we're not going to let you harm our people and steal our stuff. Yet most dopey Americans believe that the Venezuelans are evil because they're trying to protect their own people and their own property. It's utterly backwards.
That's a great point, and I'm not 100% expert on Venezuela, so I'm not going to pretend that I am, but as far as I can tell, there's two problems happening simultaneously. One is the one that you're talking about, which Western elites have been doing this for, and a lot of them not just Western people, it's people that are from other areas that masquerade as Western, if you understand what I'm talking about, but the elites are using these third world countries as basically their debt slaves. They go in and there's a book by Economic Hitman, I think. Confessions
of John Perkins,
Hitman.
Confessions of
John
an Economic
Perkins,
Hitman,
yeah. So he describes pretty well how it works. And so that's one dynamic that's going on, and they try to do that to Venezuela. You also have the neocon contingent in America, the deep state in America, that wants to go out and for their own reasons, whatever the case may be, try to dictate to all these countries, you're going to do things, it's our way or the highway, and if you try to resist, we're gonna kill you. So they did it to Gaddafi in Libya, for example. You know, he was trying to do stuff for his own people. He was trying to, I forget, create his own currency or go on the gold standard or something. He was trying to free himself from the clutches of these people, and they go in and kill him. So that's one of the dynamics, as far as I can tell, that's happening in Venezuela. The other dynamic that may be happening simultaneously is there's a lot of corruption in these third world countries anyway, so the people at the top are also parasitic and grifters upon their people. And then some of them at the same time are trying to lift the middle finger to the whole Western power complex. And so they're in a very tough situation because they're fighting very powerful people. They're trying to look out for their people in a sense, and at the same time they're also very corrupt themselves. So it's just a big mess. But you're absolutely right. A lot of these countries have a very hard time sticking up for their people because they haven't developed as far yet, and the elites are taking advantage of them, and these big multinational corporations are coming in and taking advantage, absolutely.
So I may have stepped on you when you tried to address this point, but what is it about white Europeans that they see? For example, almost every single person I know, they honor the Japanese culture. They honor the Chinese culture. They fanatical about Indian and Hindu culture. Every single nation on earth except their own. even though Europeans have been the most successful people that the world has ever known, for some reason they wax poetic about some third world nation who can't even feed themselves and are riddled with disease. And some of these and people get so misty-eyed about Africa. I mean, some of these people still don't have a written language and sell their own as slaves.
Yes.
Yet
yes.
Their civilization is so great.
I got a point for that. From my perspective, and this is why I pray in precatory prayer against the preachers in America every single day, because it's the preachers who were supposed to watch over the sheep. They have been bought and paid for, so they're nothing more than prostitutes today, and they are performing as the Baal priest did in the time of Ahab and Jezebel. They're teaching our people that it's Christ-like, and it should be our faith-based attitude that we lift up all these other races even above our own. And somehow that makes us closer to God, which is completely against what the Scripture says, okay? And we often mm-hmm. talk about in the book of Matthew, there was a woman with a sick child, and she was tugging on the Christ's robe and constantly saying, you need to heal my daughter, you need to heal my daughter. And he didn't even talk to her, okay? That's right there in the Scriptures. He did not speak to her. And finally, one of the disciples said, Master, please do something with this woman. She's annoying. She won't shut up. And he looked at the disciple. He didn't look at her, and he looked at the disciple and said, it's not good to give the children's bread to dogs. Okay, that's a volume of material in a short few verses. What he said, and dog, by the way, is an Aramaic expression for the people not of the Jacob Israelites, who were the white Europeans of mm-hmm. that time. Okay? So he referred to her as a dog, meaning somebody outside of the family, the racial family, and he said, it's not good for me to give what I came here for to people that are not part of the family. It says in another verse that I came only for the lost sheep of the house of Jacob, who was later named Israel. Jacob was his first name. Okay, that's the 12 tribes. The 12 tribes became Scythians, Parthians, Gauls, Vandals, and on and on and on. So the point of it is, they've taken Scripture and completely twisted it around to make us think that we are Christ-like if we love everybody, no matter how dastardly they behave, no matter how little they can contribute to our society, when Christ himself wouldn't even heal a woman and her sick child because he said it wasn't good. It was only when the woman said, you're right, I am a dog, but don't dogs deserve crumbs from their master's table? It was only when she said, but in the hierarchy of things, I accept my position under the table as a dog. I understand that, but I'm asking for a blessing. And that's when he said, your faith is great. I'll go ahead and heal your daughter. He didn't say, I'm going to make you an Israelite. He didn't say, come on in and marry my son so you can start a whole different species of humankind or any of that nonsense. He just simply said, okay, and just like Scripture says, those who bless Abraham, that's our ancestor, not these imposters we have today, those that bless him will be blessed, those that curse him will be cursed. The white man has always been fair with those that obey the law, meaning God's law, not mm-hmm. man's law, but God's law. We've always been fair, right. And we only brought justice and war and retribution down on people who were criminals. And I'm not talking again about man's law. I could care less about man's law. It's only God's law that matters. Even William right. Blackstone said, any law that's made by a group of men in a legislature that runs counter to God's law is of no effect. It has no merit, no effect. God has already mm-hmm. determined what's right and wrong, is what William Blackstone was saying. He's already determined it. We only have courts and statutes and all that to make the job of implementing God's law easier. We don't have a right to create new law. He didn't give it to us. Isaiah 33 and 22 makes that quite clear. So the church world is a big, big problem today. Guys like John Hagee and Jimmy Swaggart and the rest of these little whores that run around with their gold Rolex watches on and their $5,000 suits on in front of a TV camera, and they're being paid handsomely in shekels because they're doing the job of the Baal priest, leading the sheep off to the slaughter instead of sounding the alarm. At least that's my take on it.
Well, they're teaching us to reject natural law and reciprocity.
Right.
That's it. That's it. I'm sitting here thinking, you guys are the kind of Christians that Kurt Doolittle would really like, because Kurt Doolittle gives Christians a really hard time, but it's about specific things, and that's the specific thing there, that too many Christians use their interpretation of the Bible or whatever, you know, whatever they've heard from the pulpit that's like popular lies mixed in with the Bible or whatever it is, right? As
exactly.
a moral, it's like a moral imperative. You have to suffer at the hands of these people because, you know, whatever the reason they give, whether it's a cherry-picked Bible verse or just a concept that they learned from, you know, popular society at large. And so that you nailed it, Mike, and both of you nailed it, which is we are not obligated to put up with violations of reciprocity. And if we do that, there's going to be a backlash anyway. It's not going to turn out well. And so, yeah, that's a big part of the problem. And then to go back to your original question, Mike, as well, if you look at the historical reasons or some of the, you know, reasons that you see in the history of Western Europe, one thing is that Western Europeans were fairly isolated from invasions from like the Mongols, although they did take over a lot of Europe at one point. But like if you go to Eastern Europe, these people are not like Western Europeans in the sense of like, oh yeah, we're not letting the Turks in here. Are you kidding me? They're not into this whole worshiping diversity thing because they know, because their people have lived mm-hmm. on the edge of these people for a long, long time. Western Europeans were more isolated, especially you get to the English. They live on an island, right? And so then that's one of the reasons we're susceptible for that. Another is we developed a very high trust culture for very interesting reasons, which I won't go into all the detail of, but when you have a high trust culture, sometimes it's hard to know the limits of it. So a lot of this worshiping diversity and you know, it's bad to oppose immigration and all this comes from, white people of Western European descent it's an instinct to extend trust. And if we extend trust, mm-hmm. if we can figure out a way to cooperate, everybody, you know, we'll all be better off. That's basically what they're
yeah.
saying. But what they don't realize is that it's a violation of reciprocity because these people are not going to reciprocate our high trust. Most of them. Some of them do.
Right.
Most of them are not going to reciprocate it. So it's a mistake. It's an error in judgment that's born out of an instinct that has worked for us within our own group really, really fantastically well. And we haven't we're finding out the limits of it in real time, which is we can't import millions of people from all these other places because it's not reciprocated.
Amazing. You just crystallized Dr. Kevin McDonald's work in the Occidental Observer. Mm. He says all the time, he says the white Europeans who had to survive a brutal, in Arctic conditions, number one, it produced monogamy because in those brutal conditions, those very harsh, frozen tundra conditions, you couldn't take care of more than one wife and a handful of kids. And whenever you ran into other people, you cooperated because you all agreed, hey, in these terrible conditions, we have to cooperate. And those people that had those cooperation genes and experiences had more kids. Well, what do you have? You have nations full of whites who are used to cooperating with each other, and they don't understand why when they bump into others, why they don't also cooperate. Mm. So it's actually pretty simple.
Mm-hmm. It's the assumption that it's an assumption that other people are like us. It's the same thing that I had before I understood gender differences. You know, I just assumed that the girls I was interested in when I was in my early 20s, you know, thought the same way I did. Well, they don't. That's just, I was assuming
right.
they're like me, and that's what we do. We assume they're like us, and they're really not. They haven't gone through the same history that we have.
Well, our women find that when they marry men of other races. They find out, well, I don't understand. I was raised by a wonderful dad and had great brothers. You know, it's just a man, even though he spray painted a different color, which is what they think. How come they don't treat me the way my people would treat me? And unfortunately, a lot of those marriages end up with the woman being mutilated or killed because we're like little white rabbits who think everybody just wants to be our friends.
Yeah.
They don't.
And it's just really, and that's the lie. That's the propaganda. That's the lie. And it has to be broken down either through teaching or through experience. And unfortunately, a lot of times it's through experience.
Mm-hmm.
Let me
there
ask
is a
you
bright
guys...
side to that. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dan.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, we bring this up. It's in scripture, but we also see it in secular history that you push our people for so long, and then we realize, hey, they've harmed my daughters. They're stealing my property. I hear them saying they want to replace us. I'm not allowed to wave my own flag in my own country. And you push us and push us and push us, and then what happens? And John Mark, you created an amazing video. You made mention of, I think, Army War College scenarios that talk about what would happen if there was a civil war between the right and the left in America. And in almost every single scenario, the right wins. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yes, and that's actually the next video that I'm working on right now. Hopefully it'll be out this weekend, if not next weekend. But just going through, just doing a kind of an in-depth analysis of just the raw numbers and just the different factors that would come into play in a civil war in America. But you're exactly right. That's what we do. It's like we exhaust every option for cooperation. Until it's finally obvious we cannot live with these people. And when I say these people, I just refer to parasites in general. That's what's happening in America right now is people are realizing, wow, we cannot live with these people. These people are crazy. They're literally communists. It's just racial and gender communism instead of class communism like the old Russian version. But it is actual right. communism, and they're about to start winning all the elections just because of immigration. So they're getting exponentially crazier at the same time as they're starting to win all the elections. And when the larger grassroots right figures out that they can't win any more elections and they have no more political way to defend what they value anymore, what we value, it's pretty easy to predict what's going to happen. And that's why I'm very encouraged, is because when I do the analysis of what's going to happen, I mean, if the grassroots right puts up any kind of a real fight, the other side has no chance. So, I'm going to come out with a video on it very, very soon with a lot more specifics, but that's the bottom line of it.
Well, if you could include something in it, I'm not sure if it's on your outline or your agenda for that video, but we have even some folks that Dan and I speak to quite regularly that say, but what about all the AI and the robots and the 5G
and drones.
Look, yeah, when there are 400, some have estimated up to a billion guns in America, most of which are owned by white right-wing people. Yeah. When folks lose it, when folks lose everything, they lose it. Even the Japanese nation said, you should not attack America because there's a gun behind every blade of grass. That was their national analysis. So look at the left, and I don't want to steal the thunder from your video coming up, but when the left is mostly weak, parasitic, unable to even earn a living, most of them couldn't do two push-ups or get out of their seat, and they think that they're unfulfilled and oppressed because they have to call in to get their welfare on their $800 iPhone that we gave them. It is so hysterical how these people think that they would win a war against an armed, angry group of people who are the descendants of the most powerful and brilliant and successful people who've ever lived on this planet. It's almost comical.
Yeah, I've heard them say they just think like the military is going to march in and just like stomp out, you know, any rebellions. Like, listen, the military voted 2/3 for Trump. It's like, what, you really think these guys are going to like go around shooting? I don't know. You know, they're not thinking through it. But and then you've got the factor of there would be it'd be very easy to create huge infrastructure damage. Where, you know, you knock out the power, for example, to a New York City, right, or an L.A. or something. And please understand, I'm not telling people to go do this. I'm just analyzing here. If somebody does that, these cities are going to eat themselves because they, you know, everything's just-in-time supply chain when it comes to food. It's not like these grocery stores have weeks and weeks of supplies on hand. So there's going to be looting. There's going to be craziness. So that's another factor. The other factor is what they call fourth-generation warfare, which is, I mean, even in Afghanistan, you know, 85 IQ guys in flip-flops, our American military has a hard time dealing with them. Because they hit and run, and then they blend into the population. And the only way you can, quote-unquote, win is to wipe out the whole population, and you can't do that. So there's
and
all these
the
factors
line?
That are in the right's favor in a Civil War scenario.
And what's the line from Red Dawn that what did Patrick Swayze say? And he said, well, why are you fighting so hard? Because we live here.
Yes.
That's our
That's
ours.
The other factor, yes. The grassroots yeah. right would literally be fighting for their lives, for everything they value. And as you said, the left doesn't really have any way to project force. I mean, what are they going to do? Throw their pussy hats at people? I mean, other than maybe some
gangsters. They don't believe in anything.
They don't believe in anything. And then the military is two-thirds right-wing as far as at least their basic political orientation. I just don't see how the left establishment has any chance if the grassroots right decides to start, you know, putting up a real fight.
I agree.
Well, that was the question I was going to ask you guys a few minutes ago. Is okay. And by the way, folks that are listening out there, you need to go watch John Mark's videos. They're phenomenal, excellent videos. Again, just look up John Mark in YouTube and JohnMarkSays.com on his website. But tons and tons of phenomenal information there, and propertarianism fits in so well with what we teach, the true biblical law and propertarianism fit like a glove. I actually have not found a disagreement yet. I've been looking for days, and I have not found a non-biblical basis mentioned in any of their literature because it fits like a glove. It's common sense. It's biblical. It's moral. It's racial. It's just the way the world was created. But what I wanted you guys to give me is, and obviously we need to all look into not only biblical basis of stuff, but the propertarianism, because we don't need to go through this again. None of my grandchildren need to go through what we're going through today ever again. No, mankind does not have to do it. The book of Revelation says we're going to put an end to this. I believe it. In fact, I believe that that's why we're here. And I'm speaking of you guys and my listeners and everybody else. We're here to put an end to this garbage. So my question is, again, folks, you need to get up on these subjects, but what do you guys see down the road on the timeline that we're on right now? Where do you think we are, and what do you see in the, let's say, six-month time frame to year and a half from now? And I'll start with John Mark.
That's a great question, and now we're getting to the predicting the future, which is a tricky business, obviously, but I'll take my best shot. So let's say 6 months out from now. I mean, personally, I'm treating it like this could blow up at any time. The left, some stupid leftist could take a shot at Trump. I mean, like a literal gunshot or something at Trump. You know, they do something like that to Trump. You know, all bets are off of what the grassroots right might do. And so I'm treating it like, you know, festivities, tongue-in-cheek way of saying it, could set off at any time. Now, I think it's most likely that we could have some kind of a civil war scenario start to set off or a rapid escalation of violence once the larger grassroots right figures out they're not going to win any more elections. I don't think that has happened yet. I don't think the larger grassroots right has figured that out yet. I think a lot of people have, but not enough. But at the same time, there's a lot of grassroots right wingers that are really, they understand exactly what's up. They understand that, you know, there is no hope for the grassroots right wing in our current system anymore. And so they could act at any time. They could knock out power to a major city. So I just tell everybody, just be prepared with food and water, have a plan, whatever the case may be, think through a worst case scenario and have a plan of what you're going to do for yourself and your family. Because everybody feels like nothing's going to happen until it happens. And so that's what I would say. So it could be any time. I think it's most likely that something would begin to really get out of hand once the larger grassroots right figures out that they can't win any more elections. So that could be, you know, Trump loses 2020. That could be after that. Because once these leftists start to get in power again and have the presidency again, they're going to start enacting everything that they want. They're going to take away the ability to homeschool. They're going to force LGBT down everybody's throats, including young kids in school, and Islam, and all this. The craziness is going to get even more out of hand, and it's going to be impossible to live a grassroots right-wing life in America. So once that escalates, that's when I would say is most likely things could happen, but it could happen before that. And then after that, I believe the grassroots right would probably win, most likely by far, in a scenario like that. And so after that, there's all sorts of scenarios that can take place. You could have the right kind of just imposing order over all of America. You could have like secession or separation, different regions in America, devolving of power to the states. You could have a few different scenarios of how it could occur. And that's our opportunity, as you're saying, to set it up to where this doesn't happen again, because we know how to fix it. We know how to make sure our descendants don't have to keep doing this. So that would be my take on it.
Okay. Michael?
I agree. I agree with much of what John Mark said. I would just fill in a couple things. I'll use a scenario, and I'm not sure if I got this statistic from you, John Mark, but people look at California, for example, and say, wow, it's done, it's Democrat. Do you know that there are more right-wing voters in the state of California than in any other state in the union? They're just outnumbered.
Yeah.
But it's such a big state that people just write California off. Well, what if all the people with guns and wealth and beautiful beachfront homes in California decide, I've had it with this crap. And just they, I mean, I think California as a state has like the 10th largest economy on the planet. Right there, that's an example of what could happen if enough tough, smart, wealthy, determined people just say, we're done with this. You're going to tell me that I'm not allowed to wear a T-shirt with an American flag on it in a California school because a Mexican kid might be offended? No. It's done. So to dovetail with what John Mark said, I think that people are going to lose the next election, and some very, very draconian laws are going to come down on property owners and white people. These red flag laws are going to get more intense, to the point where people who merely speak up for their own people, their own kind, their own family, extended family, are going to be put in prison. Mm-hmm. And when enough of our people say, forget it, we've had it, I think D.C.'s done. The District of Criminals will no longer have any effect, because we will take the seat of power back, meaning governor's mansions in a lot of states, and those secretaries of state will say, I know what the Constitution says. We are not going to turn the money over to D.C. anymore. And if the money isn't turned over to the District of Criminals, everything's defunded. They have nothing. They will not have the National Guards. They won't have control of the power grids. And our people, you know, I hate to paint it this way, the cream will rise to the top. Those with IQ and drive and belief and love for their people, the descendants of the people who built all of this, they'll just say, we're going to take our rightful place again. We learned our lesson. Everybody who's not us, get out. We're not taking care of you anymore. I'm telling you, it could get very ugly. When we see these movies that the others put on, the owners of Hollywood, by the way, who stole that technology from Thomas Edison and ran from New Jersey to the West Coast, that's how Hollywood came about, read an empire of their own by one of their own people, they put these zombie apocalypse movies out because they know this is what's going to happen. The 70 million people in America who rely on food stamps, when they don't have food stamps anymore, what's going to happen? When they don't have Section 8 housing, this is the entire crux of the parasitical system is going to dissolve. And all these people who wander around complaining about the white guy, how he's oppressed them, are going to say, man, I had it pretty good in the white man's country. And maybe, I don't know exactly what it'll turn into. When people get hungry and scared, they do crazy things. But then again, you're going to have a lot of our people walled up in their homesteads with a lot of guns, a lot of food, and a lot of ammunition. And it's not going to be pretty. I'm not going to say it's going to be like a birthday party, but I don't see any other scenario but our people coming out on top.
Let me ask John Mark a question. We often talk about the scripture that says that the end of the age, which is where we're at, obviously, not the end of the world, the end of the age, the eon, the age, it says it would be as it was in the days of Noah, okay? And it pretty much is. And we're down to the small number of righteous white men and women that have kept themselves pure as Noah did. But Noah and his family were protected from the judgments coming, okay? In their day, the judgment took the form of a major flood in the area, and their family was put onto a boat. And they were able to survive, and the judgment came and killed everybody off except for them. They floated above it, so I'm using the analogy here. They floated above the judgments that took out all the criminality and all the parasites, and then they come back to rest and start it all over again. I sort of see us in that same place. In fact, in my mind, the marriage of true identity, what we teach, the true identity and proprietarianism fit like a glove. And people that would embrace that would very easily fit the definition of those that would be in the ark. My question is, what do you think the ark is for us in this time? What do you envision would be a way for the Father to protect his own as he's getting ready to flush the toilet of mankind, that is the LGBT and the perverts and the pedophiles and the pedivores and the criminals and the all of this degeneracy we see going on and being pushed upon us. What would you picture if you were to think, what would be the ark that would be provided? Do you see what my question is? What would it take? What form would it take in this day and age? Because the next judgment's not by water. The next one's going to be something completely different. So how would you envision some sort of an ark? Would it be communities all over the place? Would it be one great big community? Or do we just sit in our homes and we come together after the fact to rise up out of the ashes? What comes to your mind when that verse is talked about?
That's a very interesting question. One word that comes to my mind is just a simple word, preparation. And as you were talking, I was thinking about the story of Noah, and it's interesting because, you know, somebody could tell that story and say, well, God provided for them and saved them. But if you think about it, Noah had to, and his family, had to put in a tremendous amount of work before any water showed up, right?
So exactly.
This was not just like God just waltzed in, you know, that's not what the story says. So the analogy I would bring to that, and just the simple word I would say is preparation. If you wanted to take the story of Noah, you could say, well, preparation. He was doing a lot of preparation. He had to build that ark. It didn't just appear. And so that's the simple word that I would bring. And that's just kind of I'm glad you're bringing it up as well, because that's something that I just tell everybody is, prepare. And I love the idea you were talking about of communities. If you can find like-minded people in your local community, I know it's not always the easiest thing to do. But if you can find like-minded people, the more people you have, if, terrible events happen in your area, there's mobs, there's looting, there's power outages, there's shortages of food, whatever the case might be. Just imagine worst case scenario and try to prepare for it. Have a bug out plan, you know, have a place that you can go. Because the worst place to be is going to be the cities. That's going to be the worst. So the further away you can get from that, or have a plan to defend your neighborhood, and have backup food and water, whatever the case may be, that would be the simple word that would come to mind as preparation. And as you said, it's not going to be an ark, obviously, in this case, but it could take, in my mind, it could take several different forms depending on where you live and what your situation is.
Okay.
Yeah,
any
Dan,
thoughts,
if
Michael?
You use the other example of the ancient Israelites on Passover, the blood of the lamb was painted over the lintel post and the death angel passed them by. So that's another archetype of what could happen. Everybody could be in their own home. hunkering down with their family, prepared with food. Isn't that what they were told before the holy day? Get everything you need and get in your house, all your family, and lock the doors and put the blood of that lamb over the lintel, and you'll be protected. The death angel will pass you by. Well, that's what's going to happen. We're going to be prepared. We're going to be in our homes with our guns and our food and our water and our ammunition. And all these people that are going to be out on the street, they're going to be killing each other, and we're going to be protected. That's what I see. And
well, you make an excellent point, which is just the – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I was just going to bring up the Florida Maquis. He paints a different scenario. I'm not sure if you've ever seen his videos, but he's a gentleman who was an ex-military intelligence operator, I guess you'd say, and he teaches courses on this, and his belief system is that, well, when you've got all these bad guys that get released from prison, all these millions of guys who are in prison that get let go when the you-know-what hits the fan, they're not going to go to the cities. It's the Florida Maquis' belief that they flee to the places where there are no police. But I don't agree with him. I think, first of all, they're criminals because they're not too bright. They're usually the lowest of the IQ of a civilization. So they go to the places where they can parasite. They're not smart. That's why they're in prison. So they're going to go to the cities where they can parasite and rape and steal. They're not going to go out to the woods where there's nothing. So that's where I disagree with his philosophy on it. But
well, he does have a philosophy that I kind of like, and that is the idea that the states need to become more sovereign. In fact, we might even, and he talks about the same thing you do, John Mark, in peaceful separation. He advocates peaceful separation from these absolute morons that have risen to the top in this country that are just beyond belief stupid and corrupt. So certain states could become sanctuaries for the remnant. And so because we live down here, we talk about the free state of Florida as an example, get an influx of libertarians and propertarians and identity and other people that have similar views, have them come in here in such numbers that we just simply take over and scrap the whole system we got now. Forget that. That's gone by the wayside. This whole idea of three branches of government, checks and balances, the enemy always figures a way to destroy that. There's a reason why the imposters wrote the learned elders of, or the protocols of the learned elders of Zion, and why they stated in there one of the primary goals was to destroy the Christian monarchies. And the very first time I read that many, many years ago, my first thought was, what is it about the Christian monarchies that scares them, that it would be a highest priority? In fact, two world wars were instigated by these bastards to kill off millions of our people, but the prime objective was to destroy the Christian monarchies of Europe. Okay, so there must be something about the monarchies they can't stand. And then you do the history review, and you find out it's because that is the biblical way for our people to live. Because like one guy says, how are we going to get everybody on the same sheet of music? How are we going to get everybody to wake up? And not everybody's going to do that. I mean, look at the people walking down the street. Most of them can't get their face out of their damn cell phone. It's disgusting. I'm going to throw up the next time I pass another car, like today, with a BMW and a pretty young thing sitting in there, and she's watching her damn phone instead of the road.
At a restaurant? At a restaurant, and they can't even enjoy a meal with each other and have a conversation. They're all staring at their phones.
And they're texting each other. They're at the same table and they're texting each other. Talk about now, how can you expect people of that mentality to be part of the solution? They're not. And that's my idea behind a biblical monarchy and why it's so important for us today. We need to get guys like yourselves, well-read, have this thing scoped out, understand the big issues, and have a plan, And we got to do just like they did back in the days of Rome, okay? When Rome became so rotten to the core that it threatened the very existence of the Republic, it was the generals and the legions that came to the rescue. It wasn't the mathematicians and the philosophers and the historians. They weren't there. It was the generals. And the generals went to their commanders. And the commanders went to the guys, the ground pounders, and they all had a tete-a-tete. And the general walked out and said, look, dudes, the Republic's going to die if we don't do something. So here's my proposal. For those of you that think I'm right, stand up and clang your shield and sword together so I know if I've got a consensus here or not. So when 99% of the men stand up and start banging those swords on their shields, he says, all right, saddle up, and they march into Rome, and they take care of business. And I don't know if it's going to be literal or figuratively, but the way I see it, we're not far from that. The Republic is dying. The idea that we're going to get everybody on the same sheet of music in any reasonable time is pretty much hopeless. But
I think
we
that's the gap, Dan.
Leaders. What's that?
I think that's the gap. And I would never disagree with you. I would never contradict you. But I think we have to stop saying the Republic, and here's why. In their guts, the average person looks at this disgusting brown melting pot and says, I'm not dying for this. I don't care about this flag. I don't care about this government or this constitution or the F-15s flying over the Super Bowl or the fireworks. I don't give a rat's furry behind. And to be honest, I don't either. You know what I care about? My people.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to contradict you. I don't think any of those Roman soldiers gave a rat's furry behind about the concept of Rome. You know what I think they thought of? Oh, man, my home and my family and my kids and my olive groves and my, you know, my fishing boat.
Exactly.
And all
well,
of
that's
it.
Where
they
it
said,
gets down. Yeah, it gets down to racial.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just a semantic thing. I don't give a rat's ass about the Republic anymore. I think my people are going to build something amazing no matter what they call it. I to be honest with you, I think this whole crappy system has to go, because the more that we, and I'm sorry if I'm insulting anybody's patriotism, but I don't have an allegiance to a piece of paper or to a flag that has done nothing for my people. It's been they've been vehicles to destroy my people. We need something better. We need the John Mark Kurt Doolittle version of that constitution, the proprietarian constitution, and then we need to build the kingdom. And what's a kingdom? It's a family with a system of government. That's it. And that that benevolent monarch, that Christian monarch, the reason I think that our adversaries always hated the Christian monarchies is because that monarch loved his people and wanted to leave something for his people.
Right. Well, remember the monarchs, when they were put on the throne, they were put there not only as the civic leader, they were defenders of the faith, okay? So they were racial kin who were to sit there and run the civil government, but they were also one of the primary reasons there was to be the representative and defender of the faith, because the faith is
That's a great point.
Is part, because you look up the word nation, okay? What's it come from? It comes from Latin, which is the same root where we get nativity and natal and all of that. It's race, okay? Nation, if you look it up, people who share the following in common: race, language, heritage, culture, faith, and they live in a common geographical location. But you notice it's race, culture, language, faith, etc. Those things are in common, not diversity. Diversity's never been a strength. Ever in the history of mankind, diversity has never produced strength, okay? So the very word nation implies a family of people. It doesn't matter about borders. It's a family thing. Even the word brother in your Bible comes from the word Adolphos in the Greek, which means from the womb. It's talking about people from the same womb. And what womb are they talking about? Abraham and Sarah. When the Bible says honor your father and mother, they're not talking about your earthly ones. They're talking about Abraham and Sarah, because it was because of their great faith that we all are here today. Honor them, your father and mother. It's all about family. We are family. We have so much in common. It's unbelievable. And we have forgotten how to think and act like a family that defends each other. Like, I have cousins up in the hills of Pennsylvania. One of the things we used to talk about all the time was, if somebody messes with the family will take care of it. One way or the other, the family will take care of it.
Guys, this philosophy is being buttoned up nicely. All these different areas of thought, these different disciplines, they're all being wrapped up tighter and tighter, like those cords on a baseball before you put the skin around it. This all of these things are coming together. All of these, and I'm not saying I'm a great mind, but all of these great minds who have fed me, all these common threads of truth, they're coming down to the natural law, reciprocity, biblical truth, and what about your people?
It's
great to hear you guys talk, because what you just said, Mike, is so true. And I wish you guys could almost have a glimpse of when Kurt shares sometimes the people that are contacting him or people that are emailing me through my website, it's like the quality of people that are coming together. And this, I'm just seeing one little piece of it, right? The quality of people that are coming together, and everybody's kind of converging on, okay, these are the mistakes we've made, like the one you guys are pointing out. Democracy, full franchise democracy, is a failed experiment. Why? Because the average person cares more about their iPhone than about any kind of wisdom, right? So why are we giving these people, why do they have a say over my life, right?
They don't,
because
right,
they're ignorant,
exactly.
And, why should they? I'd way rather have a monarch, right? The incentives of a monarchy are much, much better than our current system that we have right now, than a full franchise democracy. And so just so everybody's clear as well, propertarianism doesn't dictate the system of government that you have to have. You could have different kind of, government, forms of government underneath propertarian reciprocity enforcing rule of law, right? One of the things Kurt has talked about is the ideal way he thinks would be to have a monarch as like a judge of last resort, and then they have the incentive, as you guys have been talking about, the monarch has the incentive because it's their family. If we do a bad job and the people get mad at us, and they hang us from the rafters, my family's dead. They're going to kill my family too. They're not going to have, the ability to continue having the good life that we have or whatnot. So all the incentives are so much better in some of these other systems, especially when you bring in the enforcing reciprocity that reins in the ability even for a king or for a system like we have right now to just start making random bad choices, right, that violate reciprocity. So when you start to combine all these things together, it's like, we know how to do this now. We know how to fix this, guys. It's not a mystery anymore, so let's go do it.
No. Well, it's the Mosaic Law, okay? If you think about it, the Israelites, when they were under the direction of our Father in Heaven, okay, how did Moses establish his command? He wasn't a dictator. It went down to the just like the libertarians always talk about, government should be at the lowest levels. Well, that's exactly what Moses established. And it started out with the captain of 10 families. Well, that's where the word chieftain comes from. It's Old English. Mm. Okay? Chief, meaning the highest authority. Ton is Old English for 10. So chieftains were rulers over 10 families. Now, not rulers in the sense of abusive or dictators or anything else. No. They were like Moses. They were to settle disputes. If there were no disputes, then the chieftain had nothing to do. He didn't go out looking for things like I don't even want to say the word I got for these politicians today. But they didn't look for reasons to be intrusive in everybody's life. They loved it when everything was a smooth lake, but they were there for when one neighbor got in the other neighbor's face. In comes the chieftain. Now, if the chieftain couldn't solve the problem, then they went to the captain of 50 families. In other words, the captain of 5 chieftains. He took it to the next level. Well, if he couldn't resolve the issue, they took it to the chief over 100 families. And again, no result? Then the chief of 1,000 families, a chief of 10,000 families, the chief of 100,000. It went through all these layers, keeping it below the monarch, until finally only the worst cases ever got presented in front of Moses. Only the worst ones. And guess what? In the society that we're talking about, the monarch's going to have probably the easiest job. Let's say the free state of Florida is where we all ended up, and propertarianism and whatnot is how we're living. Okay, he's going to have the easiest job on earth because people can fix their own problems. The monarch just has to keep all the idiots out of the way, okay? When he finds a bad apple, he needs to send the men with swords down there and take that bad apple out, because good people will figure out how to make all this work. They don't need a lot of help. What they need help with is when you get a crooked cop, a crooked judge, a crooked magistrate, a crooked state trooper, a crooked politician, a crooked corporate leader. Those are the ones that are causing our problems. And that's where we need the power of the monarch, because he sends in the men with swords and says, you're not playing by the rules, okay? So I've had the guys, the leaders from that community, we'll say counties because we're in America, so we're in the free state of Florida. So up to Tallahassee, hey, monarch, we got a problem down here in Miami-Dade. You know, we've got a local politician. He's been strong-arming everybody to pay a tax that's not legit, blah, blah, blah. Down come the troops. He gets hauled off. They find out it's true. He goes up in the tree on the end of a rope. It's problem solved. I think it'd be great.
Can I expand on that a little bit, too? One of the things Kurt Doolittle talks about a lot is a militia, the restoration of the militia. And so when I interview him, hopefully here soon on my YouTube channel, I want to ask him to paint a better picture or a more full picture for me of what he means by that. But the basic concept is this whole idea of reciprocity is really not rocket science. So you don't have to be a genius to understand this. And so it's the idea of having your men trained to be on the lookout for violations of reciprocity, exactly as you just described. And when a lot of the power is brought down to the more local levels, as you just described as well, and they have the ability to deal on the local level with their parasites or people who try to be parasitic, a lot of this, it can be nipped in the bud. Because if you think about it, America right now, we're an empire. I mean, we're huge. We take it for granted because we're used to it. But there's 330 million people in this country, and there's a tremendous number, you know, different views on everything. It's impossible to rule over this. And so one of our big problems is that the power keeps getting concentrated and centralized, and there's no way it can please everybody, so you have all this conflict. So you devolve a lot of that down to the local level, get the conflicts resolved at the local level, get the social policy to where, you know, different strokes for different folks. People can live in a different place if they want to go do, you know, things a different way. They can go to where that's it's done that way, right? Give people the right of association and disassociation. Yeah. And so you can solve a lot of problems just by trying, just by making sure that it's not just one big centralized corrupt authority trying to dictate everything to everybody and giving people the power, whether through a militia or devolving more power down to the more local level, state level, whatever the case may be. You can make a lot of these problems go away before they reach the point that they're at now.
Amen. Right.
I heard a great talk on insurance right about this concept. So, Dan, you own a car, and you get an insurance policy on it that replaces the car with a new car if it gets stolen. Well, I steal your car, and in our current scenario, you know, the cops in Miami-Dade County say, oh, well, it's gone. Your insurance will pay it off. Well, who gets screwed? The owners of the insurance company, right? And they say, oh, wait a second. How about this scenario? The insurance company has their own police force. And not only do they find the car, they find the guy who did it and have the police power to bring him to the local magistrate and say, here, this is the guy, here's the proof, he stole the car. So they have an incentive to make sure that nobody steals cars. That would be the ultimate. There's no deterrent with our law today. I mean, the criminals get away with everything and then get three hots and a cot, even if they get caught. There's no deterrent with our system. There is no reciprocity.
That's because we're not doing it the biblical way. You know, that's what kills me. The Bible sets out how you handle all this stuff, and it takes the incentive for criminals away. You talk about a car. Well, what does the Bible say to do? Well, you're supposed to find the guy that did it, and he's supposed to pay the guy back that he stole it from, the original car, and then he's got to go out and buy another car just like it as his punishment. Okay, he doesn't go to prison. He doesn't become a burden to the rest of us. He's got to go out and get a job or get another job or three jobs, whatever it takes for him to be able to afford to buy a second car as punishment for what he did to the owner, not to some government, but to the owner of the car that he stole it from. So that's incentive right there. And people say, well, that'll never work. I said, why is that? He goes, well, because nobody's going to work and pay for somebody else to get another car. I says, well, there's a way to handle that. And they said, well, what's that? I said, well, when you refuse to do what the elders, the judges of our people say is the biblical law, it's called blasphemy. And guess what the punishment for blasphemy is? Death.
Death.
Okay? So here's your choice, you 18-year-old punk that thought it was okay to steal my car and go joyriding in it. You either get your ass out there and get a job and buy me another car, give me back my first car, get me another car, or we're going to come down with a few guys in the middle of the night, and you're going to be hanging from the end of a rope. Okay? I think they're going to work and get the car paid for, really. And if they don't...
Well, what's worse?
Okay, so we're done with a criminal. It's gone. If he has no respect for the law and he won't pay for his crimes, well, okay, he's at the end of the rope and becomes worm bait. Problem solved, right?
Yeah, and what's worse is they put them in a ditch. They put them in a ditch, and they have all the kids in the neighborhood watch while he gets stoned to death.
Well, you can do it
either
way.
How many cars would get stolen after that?
Here's the thing I love about biblical law, and I've given a lot of demonstrations in live audiences about this. I used to bring a sword. I had a Roman short sword, and I'd bring it in, and we'd go over, why did the Bible have different forms of punishment? Okay, think about it. It's called closure. Why was there stoning for certain laws? Well, think about it. You've got a young lady that was raped and murdered, and you've got the culprit there. Well, if you just walk up and run him through with a sword, you still got a lot of emotional damage done because the family has lost their daughter. They got this horrible crime, and they just ended this guy's life quickly and mercifully. Not a whole lot lost there, not a whole lot of closure. Okay, so what did the Bible say to do? Well, you take a guy that commits a crime like that, and you put him in the ground, and then all the family pick up rocks, and they throw rocks at this piece of shit, excuse my French, until he's dead. All right, now there's closure. The family got to do something to avenge the innocent blood that's been shed. You don't have to pay professionals. You don't need a bunch of judges and cops and other people involved. You take the family of the poor girl, and they go out there and take this piece of dog meat, and they throw him on the ground and then pile rocks on him until he's dead. All right, now you have closure. The guy is gone, which is the biblical commandment. You commit rape or murder, you die, period. We're not going to try to rehabilitate you. We're not going to put you in a jail where we feed you and keep you alive for the next 50 years. No, 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 no. We're going to put a big pile of rocks on you, and you're going to die. Okay? The family goes home and says, we committed just... Huh?
I'm sorry, Dan. I stepped on you. I apologize. I was just going to say they removed the sociopathic genes from the society. Yes. You don't have a chance to pass those genes on.
Yeah, and the family feels impotent because it goes back thousands of years. It's in our genetic makeup. Especially us men. You mess with my family, I'm going to take you out. Okay, that's what we've done as Vikings, as Scythians, as Parthians for thousands of years. We didn't sit around and wait for a bunch of cucks down at some stupid municipal building pretending to be judges and prosecutors and all that. They don't give a damn about us. They don't give one damn about it, okay? The men got together, and I tell this story when I was a boy in the hills of Pennsylvania. We had a little girl from the town that disappeared, and I was about 5 or 6 years old, maybe 7. And I remember my dad talking about the fact the men got together. All the men of that area in the woods got together and met the sheriff. And the sheriff only had like one or two deputies. You almost never saw them. Okay? He was kind of the leader, but it was the men of the community got their rifles and their bloodhounds, and they went to the woods. And they stayed in those woods until they found the little girl, and they found the piece of shit that had kidnapped her. And Lord knows what he intended to do with her. And they drug his sorry ass out of those woods and took him in. And I don't remember exactly what happened to him, but he was some kind of a guy that lived up in a little shanty. He was dirty and maybe he had some kind of mental illness. But nobody said, hey, let's try to get him rehabilitated, and we'll get him some drugs, and we'll send him to the psychiatrist. No. The men got their rifles, their flashlights, and their hound dogs, and they went up and found this son of a bitch, and they drug him out of those woods, and they made sure something got done to him, and the little girl was returned to her family. That's the way we did it. That's what's in our blood.
Well, look what's going on in England.
That's why we're
England.
So frustrated.
Mm. Look at that's, England.
Well, I got
look
it
at what happened
right
in Rotherham.
Yes.
Yeah.
Look at Rotherham. 1,500 girls over the course of a decade were groom raped by these Pakistanis, and our own people, the police and the judges said they didn't do anything because they didn't want to be called racist. So in other words, my daughter gets threatened every day and told, unless you allow us to rape you and unless you keep your mouth shut, we're going to murder your family, and the cops do nothing. 1,500 girls. And then they put Tommy Robinson in jail for talking up about it.
Yep.
Man, you guys are just gold right now. This sounds like something that I heard Kurt say in an interview and he was saying it is basically the same thing. This is what's been taken from us. When we've had to outsource all restitution to a group of people that don't care about us, and quote unquote the state or whatever the case may be, where we as local community members can't, we have no recourse if something like this happens, right? We're not supposed to do that kind of stuff anymore. And this is what needs to be restored. Our rule of law needs to be better to allow us to have actual recourse and, you know, the ability for us to take care of these things, whether we call it a militia or whatever we call it. There's no way these things like Rotherham or your example there, Commander Dan, should be allowed. I mean, we've got to have this restored to our civilization. And I love how you were pointing out this is us. This is has been us however long it goes back, right? Hundreds of years, thousands of years. Kurt talks about how for hundreds of years we killed 1.5% of our population on average every year for hundreds of years just by hanging criminals. We had no patience for this kind of garbage. Now today everybody wants to give them, you know, three hots and a cot, like you were saying, Mike, and try to rehabilitate them and all this stuff, and we're way too soft on crime. Restitution, Kurt talks about this all the time. One example he gives is you know, if you're married and I go sleep with your wife and I ruin your family, I have to pay restitution. I have to pay damages. It's not just, you know, a slap on the wrist or you know, a little bit of jail time or whatever.
Right.
It's restitution. And if you falsely accuse somebody, we were talking about this on Facebook the other day. People who falsely accuse someone of a crime should get double if they're convicted of that, should get double the penalty of what the crime would be that they were falsely accusing the person of. Because, you know, all these people that are falsely accusing men of rape, they can ruin a man's life just with a rape accusation out of thin air, whatever case may be.
That's a biblical principle, okay?
Yeah.
Leviticus and Deuteronomy says that if you give false testimony, okay? Now, cops today, they joke about lying on the witness stand. They call it test of lying. They make fun of the fact that they're liars, okay? But here's what the Bible would say, and this is what I would do. If I was the monarch of Florida, the free state of Florida, I would institute biblical law, just like King Alfred did in Old England, and had some of the greatest years of England's history was under King Alfred. He codified the Old Testament. You take the guy that's up on the witness stand, and they're going to commit perjury up on the witness stand. Well, what's the Bible say to do? Well, what was the accused there for? Okay, murder. Well, if he was accused of murder and found guilty, what would we do? Hang him. Okay, so what's the punishment now for you committing perjury on the witness stand? The exact same thing. You commit perjury in a capital crime case, we're going to take you outside the courthouse and we're going to hang you. Okay? So you judges, mm-hmm. prosecutors, lawyers, misfits of society, women that love to get men in trouble with false accusations, you keep it up, because the penalty for your crime that you're talking about is hanging. And guess what? Mm. We catch you lying, you're going to hang. Mm. I think that would put an end to it pretty quick, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. The incentives it sets up are so much better.
Yep. You know what, Dan and John Mark, a friend of mine who was an attorney, actually a woman who worked for me in my previous job, she said that the root of the system is so corrupt. She said, think of what the word in Latin and Spanish is for attorney. It's abrogado, meaning the very theme of an attorney is that the person who has the rights that have been wronged has to abrogate their authority to speak up for themselves and demand justice over to somebody who doesn't have the same incentive. So this is what we've been trained to believe, that these God-given rights that we have, these natural rights that we have, that we're taking the law into our own hands if we do something about it. Dan, keep me honest. That's not what the Bible says. We have a duty to make sure that these laws get fulfilled.
Right. It's not a suggestion. It's a commandment.
That's right.
That's why he said to the disciples, even, you know, that's what kills me about, that's why I used to carry that sword to the meetings when I used to give the talks in front of live audiences. I used to bring the sword, and that used to get some eyes popping, come in front of a group at a church or a barn or a gathering, and here you got this Roman sword, and you're pulling it out. And I'm telling him, I say, well, in Luke, when he told his own disciples, now, I'm not going to be with you much longer. You need to have one of these. What? And the Greek words was a sword, not a spiritual sword, not a euphemism like the church world today teaches, which is completely ludicrous. Okay, it was a sword. It's got sharp edges. It's made of metal, and its purpose is to dispatch another man. Okay, he told him to get one of those. Why? He said, I'm not going to be with you. I am the Father in a flesh body. I can protect myself if I want to, and I can protect you, but I'm going to go away. And you're going to be left here with wolves and stuff around you. You need to protect yourself. So right there, the Messiah himself said, you need to have one of these swords. And when he went to the garden and he was betrayed, what did Peter do? Now let's see. Peter, he's the rock. And he was with the Savior for 3.5 years. That's pretty good, because they didn't have any cell phones or flat screens or smartphones to distract him. He had a whole 3.5 years to be with the Messiah himself. So I think he probably picked up a few pointers in a 3.5 year period. So here he is in the garden at the very end of his ministry, and what's he got strapped to his hip? A sword. And when the guy comes up and he kisses the Messiah to betray him, what does Peter do? Does he say, hey, wait a minute, let's have a talk about this? Or wait a minute, let's bring in a psychiatrist over here and see if this is really the right thing to do. No, he pulled that sword out, and he went to take the man's head off. Now, people say, well, no, he just nicked his ear. I'm going, let me think. No, wait a minute, you're in the garden, you've got somebody attacking the Messiah, and you're going to aim for the ear with a sword that's about 3 feet long? You're a pretty damn good swordsman. No, he was going for the throat. He was going for the throat to take the man's head off, and the man ducked, and he cut his ear. All right? So don't be so stupid as to tell me, oh, he just meant to wound him. No, he meant to decapitate him.
Yep. But we still have this image of the anointed as some skinny, weak, Jewish-looking, effeminate, wimpy, frail, turn the other cheek.
That's, no.
That's not what he looked like. That's not what his personality was. That's why, to John Mark's point earlier, the brilliant Kurt Doolittles of the world and a lot of our other people say, well, what the heck has Christianity done for us? Well, we've been given a counterfeit Christianity. We haven't been given the real good news about what the kingdom was and what's coming. We've been... This, the real gospel, the real message of the Bible is about this incredibly successful group of ancestors of ours that were successful because they did, for the most part, what their God told them to do. This is the natural consequence of keeping these laws, these natural laws, the law of reciprocity. That's what happens. A people gets blessed when that happens. So whether you believe in the religious aspect and the higher power as we do, or you just believe, wow, this would work. This is a good way a civilization would work from a secular standpoint. You can't argue. It works.
Yeah. As my dad used to tell me all the time, you can't argue with success. A beautiful one-liner. I used to love the one-liners when I was a boy. You can't argue with success. I said, thank you. Hallelujah. You're right. I mean, talk about the wisdom. It's like there's a verse in Proverbs that says that a wise man is of few words. Okay? And I love the fact that my father, bless his soul, when I was a boy, he was famous for the little one-liners. And sometimes it was embarrassing because he was trying to point out how stupid you were. But it was to teach you a lesson, all right? Teach you a lesson. So even the old one about red sky at night, sailor's delight, red sky in the morning, sailor's warning. Well, that's right out of the Bible. A lot of people don't even know that. They think it's just an old saying of the founding fathers. No, it's not. It's been talked about for thousands of years, okay? And it's a fact. Red sky at night, you're probably going to have good weather the next morning, okay? So little one-liners of wisdom, and the one especially if you spoil the child, okay? You spare the rod, you spoil the child. Well, the child could be 12 years old or 52 years old. If you spare the rod, if you spare judgment, you get childish behavior. We're being ruled by children and women. Exactly as the book says, when you're in rebellion, you'll be ruled over by many. And even another verse that says, women and children will rule over you. And that word in the Greek, by the way, means women or effeminate men. And what do we see on the picture tube of the people with these completely idiotic proposals coming out of Washington and elsewhere today? If it isn't minorities, women, and youngsters. You know who Coach Dave is? Dave Dabenmeyer? He's got his own ministry called Pass the Salt. He's up in Ohio. He did a video here last week where he talked about he went to the local congressman there in Ohio where he's from to have a few words with him about something that was going on. He said, I walked into that congressman's office. He said every one of the people in that office working for that congressman was a teenager.
Oh, my gosh.
A teenager.
Oh, I can't.
There's
Dan,
a reason.
May I?
I was going to say.
I was going to ask. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say the Greeks had a word technon. It's for somebody below the age of 40. They had a line of demarcation for the ancient Greeks was a 40-year-old, all right? That's where we get the word technology from, okay? If you didn't get to the age of 40, you didn't have anything worth listening to. And my own father told me that, by the way. I don't know if he knew that about the Greeks or not, but I asked him one time when I was going through some bad problems with a divorce and everything, and I went, like an idiot, I went to see a social worker to see if there was something wrong, and I told my father about it and all, and he basically said, well, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. And I said to him, I said, Dad, how come we didn't have a buddy relationship when I was a boy and all? And he laughed at me. He said, who told you something as stupid as that? He said, let me tell you what my job was as your father. First of all, to have you. Second of all, to feed you. Third of all, to educate you, put a roof over your head and educate you, and keep you alive until you're 18 years old. He goes, then maybe we can sit down and have a talk like we're buddies. He said, but until you get to be 18 years old, you don't have much that I want to hear, to be honest. Okay? And he was right. I thought when he said it, I said, boy, that's pretty cruel. You know, in this day and age, we're supposed to be these soft-hearted guys. And, oh, come here, son. And No, that's not the men of my family. The men of my family had a completely different attitude. It was like, you don't have a say. And I remember him telling me and my siblings one day in the house, you guys need to understand something. There's only one rule in this house, and that's that I'm the king, period. I make the rules, you follow the rules, or there's retribution. That's all you need to know. I'm not going to argue with you. I'm not going to play psychiatrist with you. He said, that's all a bunch of BS. You just need to know that I rule this house, I pay the bills, and here's my rules, and you will follow them. I've said hallelujah my entire life that my father and mother were that way. Strict disciplinarians, because it works. It kept me alive. The fear of my father kept me alive through my teenage years. When I had buddies that say, Dan, you want to go out and have a beer? No. Well, why not? I said, because my father will kick my ass and then kick me out of the house. He told me so. And I know he'll do it.
And who is the government today to tell you that you're not allowed to raise your kids that way?
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah.
Strangers. Yeah.
Strangers, exactly. Well, I told you about the time a family member of mine in Virginia had a social worker. It's a long story, but here's this Child Protective Services, and I'll call her what she was, a bitch. She comes to the house and starts interrogating, and she's going to do all this stuff about this child, and we got a report, and blah, 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 blah. And I looked at her, and I went, well, one of the issues with this child is a health issue, and and she goes, yeah, but by the way, why did you take him off sugar? I said, well, he's got irritable bowel syndrome and he's got some digestive issues and sugar's just bad. Sure, what's wrong with sugar? Sugar's good. And so we got into this discussion, and I said, well, wait a minute. You work at Child Protective Services, and you're a nutritionist. You're a nutritionist, four-year college degree in nutrition, and you don't understand what's wrong with sugar? She goes, at one point, she goes, well, you sound like my sister. And I said, well, what does that mean? She goes, well, she spends hours in the grocery store reading labels and looking for organic and all this other stuff. She goes, if I had children, so there was an eye-opener, if I had children, I'd feed them whatever's on the shelf. And I said, so here you are with a four-year degree in nutrition. You don't even know that sugar, white sugar, is bad for a child. And you don't even have children of your own? Are you even married? And come to find out, a lot of times they're not. They're fresh out of college, and they're out here telling moms and dads how they can raise their children for the state.
Ridiculous.
How do we separate ourselves from these control freaks? Is there any kind of a project plan on paper for separating ourselves?
You struck a chord earlier today, Mike. If you want to go into what you and I talked about earlier today, I think you made an excellent point, and I think John Mark might like to hear it, because I think it is a lot of merit to it. When we talked about losing fear.
Well, I was in my vehicle, and I just basically said, I'm at the point in my life where if I have a single fear, it's going to my grave not having done everything I can for my people. And I don't mean that in that I'm looking for some kind of an office or all I want to do is go to my grave knowing that I did everything I can for the next generation. I have children. I have grown children. And I don't want them to hate me. And I want them to have a better life than I did. I want the family to be elevated. And you know what? We're at the point where, and I'm seeing images from John Mark's videos. I don't think, even though I would love there to be a peaceful separation, I don't think it's going to happen, because these control freaks and their army of parasites are not going to take their claws out of us. So what's the plan? What's the plan? Do we run for offices? I don't think we're going to win elections. Do we say we're not going to put up with it anymore and we stop complying? We develop our own money system that's not based on usury. I mean, secession is a right. It is the expression of the natural right of free association. The actual Constitution, the documents that are signed when a state, which was a sovereign nation, becomes a state of the Union, says we can back out of this agreement anytime we want. But like the brutal spouse that doesn't want the wife to leave, this government thinks that it can tell sometimes tens of millions of people, no, you're not allowed to leave. You're our slave. You have to stay in this union. No divorce. Well, what's the propertarian plan? How do we back out of this and say we don't want to be a part of this anymore? And then if it comes to blows, it does.
Yeah, I mean, Kurt has been saying this, and I've been saying this, and we catch flack for it. You guys might catch the same kind of flack, but we've been saying that civil war is pretty much deterministic, and it's not like we're calling for it or we want it. It's just like this is what's going to happen because it's exactly what you're saying, Mike. I mean, I think it's worth it and worthwhile for people to put effort into secessionist movements. And by the way, there's a good Facebook page or group, I forget which one it is, but it's called Peaceful Red State Secession, and that guy has a lot of good practical information about it and some of the options. But as you're saying, Mike, I don't know if they're going to allow that to happen because the elites would have so much power and wealth to lose in a scenario like that. They would fight it tooth and nail. And many of these states, by the time the people wake up enough to really get serious about it, many times their demographics have changed so much that they can't get it to pass. I'm not going to say it's 100% impossible that a movement like that could start in one or more states or places, but it's looking less and less likely by the day because of exactly what you said, the psychology that the left is operating in. For them to allow us to do that, it would be like, you know, we're Satan to them. It would be like letting Hitler win a war or something, you know, in their minds. Mm-hmm. And also, of course, the incentives of the elite, as I was talking about. So it's looking less and less likely. But then, you know, if we can regain power and just hold land against the parasites and against immigration, we can fix this. We can set it up for our descendants, put up big walls, whatever we need to do. And we may end up ruling over all over the United States as well, the entire United States. So that's one of the possible scenarios. So at this point, it's basically just, you know, we can, as I say in my videos, I advocate for peaceful separation. As long as there's a slightly more than 0% chance, I'm going to keep doing that. But it's unlikely. But fortunately, our team has much more advantage in any kind of a hostility scenario. And so if that occurs, we're going to have a chance to put something better in place somewhere. And we need to be ready for it. So that's what I'm doing right now is I feel it's my mission to prepare people for, okay, let's be smart about what we put in place when this thing shakes out because it's going to shake out. So that's my take on it. And I got to take off here, guys. My wife is asking me to get off the phone, but it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you guys. And if every Christian was like you guys, Western civilization would already be saved.
Well, as you say on your videos sometimes, we could fix this tomorrow.
The grassroots right could fix this tomorrow if the motivations were in place, and the motivations are getting in place. They're getting more and more in place every day. Yep.
All right. Yeah. Well, John Mark, I know you have to go, so we're going to let you go, but I want to say thank you very much. This has been a great thrill, and you have a great rest of your evening, and I hope you'll come back on.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah, take good
care.
Thank
you, sir.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, again, yeah, John Mark, and his website is johnmarksays.com. A ton of information and links there to other websites where proprietarianism is explained if you're confused about it. The tenets of it fit hand in glove with the things we talk about. It's just amazing to me, and I love it. I love it that people like John Mark are putting these Very well done. If you haven't seen his videos, you really, really have to see them. I mean, it's amazing to me. I don't have that kind of talent. But they put together very hard-hitting, short videos that make the points that we're trying to make, and I just wish them well. I wish we had 10,000 like them. This uprising would be tomorrow. So what do you think, Mike?
You know what? Well, you just made me think of something. The Newton's second law, right? Power was your vocation.
Yeah,
for every reaction, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Well, we're going to have John Marks popping up all over the place. The more that our adversary pushes and pushes and pushes against us, the Father is going to provide us with more and more John Marks. I mean,
well,
brilliant guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and again, there's about six or seven YouTube channels being produced by guys like John Mark. Very educated, very scholarly. They've done their homework. They're putting these true history of the white race. They're going into the fact that we were the Scythians of old, and we had and here again, I love that with I think it's Osso Lagos put that YouTube together of the Scythians. The Scythians were a powerful and a large empire for many thousands of years in Central Europe and Eastern or Western Asia, okay? And they were our people, obviously. They show the carvings, the descriptions, some of the mummies that have been dug up, all of them, you know, they got blondish hair. The descriptions all talk about them having either green or blue eyes. And one of the main things about our ancestors that I found powerful was the fact that these people did not respect money. They had no desire for or respect for money. They considered it almost like a bad sign or a bad omen that somebody would want any kind of money around them. They put more emphasis on integrity of the man, courage, being a good warrior, being a good provider, being simple, and
home,
having a system,
family,
home and family, and having a system of justice. Very just. You know, they were renowned for their system of justice within their lands. So again, that's who we are, and that's what hurts about what's going on today. At our core, we're just. We know we're just. And as somebody put it to me here recently, you men are the sons of the Most High. You Adamic men were put here by the King of Kings with a mission. When are you going to do it? Why are we sitting around hoping that the degenerates give us permission to be the sons of the Most High?
Okay, I'm just gonna throw it out there. I'm gonna run for something. I'm gonna run for something in a local election, maybe even a state. I'm just throwing it out there. I'm gonna run for something, and the platform is gonna be: are you tired of being slaves? And I'm gonna prove to whoever the constituents are that we don't live in a free country. When your money system is based on a Ponzi scheme that is mathematically impossible for you to ever get out of debt as a people, as a nation, you're a slave.
You're a slave.
When people who have no skin in the game can send your sons and daughters overseas to die in horrible wars against people who have done nothing to us, nothing to us. And if you refuse to go, you're sent to prison. You're a slave. If you pay 359 or 360 payments of a 30-year mortgage and owe a dollar on property taxes, you lose your house if you can't pay it. You're not an owner of property. You're not a landowner. There is no great American dream. You're a slave. You're a tenant in common on the king's land. If you can't even own your place, if you're not allowed to grow your own food, you're a slave. If you're not allowed to collect a barrel of rainwater that falls from the Most High and is given to all of us as a gift, you're a slave.
Yeah.
If you're not allowed to travel on the roads to go earn your pay without permission from the government, you're a slave. I'm telling you, the time is right for everyone to be woken up about this. And I'm telling you, the average person, when they realize what real freedom is, they're going to be pissed. They're going to be pissed. And you know what has been a boon for us? The fact that Donald Trump has betrayed us. Because the average person is going to hear this message and they're going to say, whoa, wait a second. Our billionaire orange-faced boy who's been nothing but a puppet for the Zionist Jew has betrayed us. He's betrayed us. He was supposed to be the great white hope. All of we white people who voted for him. And he's done nothing for us except steal more money, steal more technology, steal more blood from us, and continue to deindustrialize this country, regardless of what the newspapers said. We're in trouble. We're in trouble. Our people are in trouble. And the same president who said he's going to put up a wall tells us, oh, we need more people. I don't care what they look like.
Yeah.
We need more people, more workers, while the whites who voted him into office are standing on the sidelines, unemployed, wondering where all those great manufacturing jobs are that he promised.
Mm-hmm.
They lied to us. We were tricked, people. Wake up. He's not going to be the great white hope. He's not going to save you. He's in bed with the Jew.
Yeah. Even Jimmy says here, Trump is yet another Trojan horse. Well, he gave us a hint of the betrayal right off the bat when he had all those good things to say about Obama and Hillary, and she did a great job. Are you kidding me? She did a great job. Bragging about 58% of Congress is now female. Hey, I got news for you. That much estrogen in any building is a disaster, okay? I don't care if it's the halls of Congress or the local five and dime. You can't only handle so much estrogen. You put that much estrogen in anything, and it's a total screw-up, all right? That's just the life. That's just the way it is. And people say, oh, you guys sound like you're anti-girl, you're anti-female, blah, 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 that we're all the problem. I'm not saying you're all the problem, but, you know, I'm of the age group where I watched us being taken down this path. I'm of the age group that men ran things when I was a boy and I went into the military. I watched what happened as we opened the door for females into branches of the service that never had a female in it. And then we opened the doors for minorities into the career fields that took very high test scores, which had almost no minorities in it. Okay? So I watched what it did to the military. I watched what it did to the maintenance departments in the power plants when you start giving people jobs based on their genitalia or the color of their skin. You know what it's called? An abject failure. That's what it's called.
But Dan, when you ask the females, when you try to have a rational conversation with them, and you say, well, wait a second. In the possibly millions of years of human history, which we're finding out now, it's possible we've been around for millions of years, and maybe there was ancient technology that was even greater than what we have now. Show me the single human civilization that was run by women.
None.
There isn't one. And then you know what the answer is from the women? Well, men didn't let it. Well, hold on a second. If women can do anything a man can do and they're just as smart and tough and strong, why did the women stand for it then?
Yeah.
It's a myth. It doesn't exist. And then in today's civilization, in the West, the stupid West who allows women to have positions of authority, who are the people that ensure and enforce the laws by force to make sure women can have all these privileges? Men with guns.
Yep.
They're the ones that enforce these privileges to our detriment. So this idea that women are just as tough and smart and strong and powerful is a lie. It's a fallacy. It's a myth. It doesn't exist. And the more we promote any myth, whether it's Santa Claus or this feminist ideology that we have, the longer we believe these fairy tales, the more the pain is going to be when we get over it. Why don't people just want to fulfill their role? What was wrong up until a couple of generations ago with a woman being a woman and a man being a man? Who taught us to hate every single cell, the very imprint from our Creator on every single cell of our body? Who taught us to hate that?
The Antichrist. The Antichrist's already here. Sure. Everybody's looking for the Antichrist. The Antichrist's children are already here. They're here by the millions. They're called Jews, all right? I don't know what's so hard for people to figure out about that. They are, just read the Talmud. You know, I've been telling people in different chat rooms and blogs and all that, you guys need to find out what's in that Talmud. That's their holy book, not the Bible. Don't be like these Zionist Christians that are complete idiots. They don't have a clue what the hell's going on in the real world. Go read the Talmud. That's the book that they go by, them and the rabbis who will stand up and down on the Talmud. The whole idea about the Torah, they talk about the Torah, yeah, that's to deceive the gullible Christians, the whites. That's to deceive them to think that they are the people of the Bible. No, they're not. It's a Babylonian Talmud, and the Babylonian Talmud gives them a right to rape us, to murder us, to kill our children and sell off their body parts, etc., and lie under oath. All these despicable things that Jews do, the Talmud says is perfectly fine because they're the master race. All of us are just mere goyim, just herd animals that were here at their pleasure. I mean, people need to wake the hell up. I mean, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Well, yeah, and it's just a coincidence. It's just a coincidence. First of all, who could possibly believe that the Jews are the tribe of Judah? Do they resemble us at all? Do they have any of the characteristics of our people? They're merchants. They're conniving merchants. They don't work. They don't have their own countries with their own infrastructure. The only country they have that belongs to them has been built by other people.
Yep. And they can't even handle it right. If it wasn't for us dumping billions of dollars on top of their sorry asses, they wouldn't even be in existence. The Arab nations alone could have wiped them out. So it's ridiculous. The whole idea that they're even remotely associated with who we are is ridiculous. Just totally ridiculous.
And who would believe a single word that John Hagee has to say? That disgusting ogre-looking little troll. Who the heck would believe? I mean, who would believe anything he says? The guy's sweating buckets before he even steps up behind the podium.
Yeah.
He's got more chins than a Chinese phone book. The guy is disgusting. I mean, who the heck would listen to him? He's repulsive.
I know. Well, just as soon as he opens his mouth, he's like that Joel Osteen and what the hell's that other one's name down there in Texas? I always get his name screwed up.
That's a blessing that you don't remember his name.
I don't know why. I can remember a lot of names, but for some reason I get to his name. It's Kevin or what the hell's his name? He's got an airfield. He's got jets. He's got prop planes. He lives in a mansion. I mean, it's like, wait a minute. What's Christ-like about you and your lifestyle? Of course, he thinks he's worth it because he thinks he's teaching God's word, but he's really just a businessman and he's deceiving the sheep. So I can't think of his name.
Hope I'm there on that day. Kenneth Copeland.
Kenneth Copeland, that's it. I don't know why
I hope I'm there on that day.
When he stands in front of the Father? Yeah, that'll be a good one.
All of them.
The Robert Schulers, all the rest of the prostitutes in front of the camera. But they got a lot of shekels.
Dad.
You know, they probably got their little pedophilia thing gone. They've been invited to Jeffrey Epstein's island along with the rest of the sick, demented pieces of garbage that are going there. So I hope they enjoyed it because Judgment Day.
Oh, and they got to say the benediction at the Super Bowl.
Oh, is that right?
Yep.
Well, I stopped watching that garbage years ago. Oh, unbelievable. Well, anyway, it's been a good program. I think we got a lot of really good stuff from John Mark, and I think that's going to continue because those guys put together some stuff on those websites. It's just unbelievable. If you could just read 10% of what they've got in their library online there, you would be miles ahead of the average person, probably miles ahead of most of the professors in colleges. I mean, like I said, I've read thousands of books in my lifetime, and most of the books they have there, I haven't read yet. It was incredible. They had titles and authors that I've never even heard of, and they look interesting as hell. Now, some of them I did know, like Kevin MacDonald and G. Edward Griffin and different people like that, but they've got a lot of very scholarly works that are put up there by people that I had not even run across yet. So John Mark and Kurt Doolittle, I think they're on to something. I think we need to join both camps and go forward. What do you think, Mike? And when you start running for office, let me know. I want to work for you.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks. So you just made me think of something. So there's an old saying that it's harder to convince somebody they've been fooled than to fool them. Well, if you think about it, we've got a very elderly population of white Americans. The baby boomers are getting real old. And they've lived this whole life believing in the myth of the Jew and the myth of the nation of Israel and the fake Christianity and the, you know, the false god of the Constitution and democracy and diversity is our strength. So if you've lived, let's say, 6, 7, 8 decades believing all of that, and two wise guys like Dan and Mike, and then, you know, their Thomas Jefferson-like John Mark show up and say, oh, your whole life has been a lie. It's hard for people to stomach that. It's hard for people, they don't want to believe it because it's like admitting that your entire life has been a waste. Your entire life has been, you know, an effort to betray your own people. So that's why I think we have to get into the minds of our young people, people who can be convinced and not lied to or cajoled or, you know, tricked, but really shown that their lives can still mean something, that you are the descendants of a great people. Don't waste your life. Make your life mean something. Do you know what the average age of the founding fathers was during the revolutionary period? There was most of them were in their 20s and 30s.
Right. Yeah.
So we've got, that's why I don't know how old John Mark is. He's very impressive. He sounds like a young man. At any age, he would be impressive. But this is what we need. We need a crop of guys like this that say, you know what? I know what the true history of my people is, and I'm not going to stand by and watch you destroy this. I'm not going to be wiped from the face of the earth. I'm not your slave. I'm not your property. And this is over. This experiment has failed. Now what? Make me do these things. As soon as the government pulls the rug on these kids, most of them are so laden down with student loans, they're never going to be able to pay. They're working fast food jobs. They're watching their women go with these foreigners. And if their women are harmed by these animals, they're not allowed to do anything about it, according to the law. They're being taught that everything their people have been for millennia has been nothing but theft and robbery and oppression of other people. They're waking up. That's who I think we have to appeal to.
Yeah. Well, they're like that young guy that went out there with the Black Lives Matter. People were jumping around like a bunch of jungle bunnies and hooping and hollering and all their other nonsense. And this young white guy went out there and basically just said, we built civilization, dude. What are you guys out here protesting about? okay? You're sitting here acting like you built it. Just because the idiot Obama said something like that, that doesn't make it true, all right? You know, white people built this civilization that you benefit from, and yet you're trying to destroy the white race. What the hell's wrong with you people? You're trying to kill the goose that laid the golden egg. Of course, that's a that would require you being able to read the is it Aesop's fable that's in or not? I can't remember. But anyway, yes. You know, it would require reading, which leaves out about 80% of the youngsters today. I don't think they know how to read. All they know how to do is text in that shorthand, that briefhand code. No,
they don't know how to exercise logic or reason.
Well, that's why I keep going back to the Mosaic Law and a beneficial monarchy with men at arms behind the monarch and his commanders. That's it. That's all that it takes. Pick somebody who represents what the hell the goal is and support them. Really, that's all it takes. You look at the Bible when it talks about the judges of Israel, our people, Jacob, Israel. When the judges were there, it was the men with the swords, and the man with the inkhorn was an elder. He was one of the judges. And when he went out and he marked somebody for being destroyed for whatever they did, then the men with the sword came in and took care of business. It was that simple.
Yeah. Yeah. There was no appeals. There were no Jew attorneys showing up saying you were violating somebody's human right. They got rid of them.
Yeah, isn't that ironic? A Jew talking about human rights when in the synagogues they talk about the fact we're just cattle to be used and abused. Okay, there are no rights for us non-Jews because the Jews think we're all here to be their slaves. So it's just
Palestine.
People need to wake the hell up.
Palestine's the biggest open air prison / concentration camp.
Well, I heard one
talking about human rights.
The last American vagabond did a video about Palestine. You know what these despicable Jews do? They go in there with their weapon systems, and they use them against the Palestinians, who are typically unarmed, so that they can claim that their battle or weapon system that they developed is battle-proven. This is how shysters work, so that they can go on the marketplace to make money selling their dumbass inventions for crowd control and other kinds of weapons so that they can claim it is battle-proven. They go in and kill a bunch of unarmed Palestinians. That's the way a Jew thinks.
Yeah, and they shoot the poor people in the genitals.
That's unbelievable.
They shoot these men in the genitals and then stand around laughing.
Unbelievable.
If you were to write a script about the very children of Satan the devil, would that not be them?
Yeah, absolutely. When I read Obadiah 18 and Ezekiel 25 verse 14, and it talks about the Edom Esau, and in John chapter 8, when he talks about the children of the devil, the great adversary, just the word itself, devil, diablos, adversary. Who's the greatest adversary to all mankind? Who's the greatest adversary to living a prosperous life and in a world that's not polluted and everything? Who's making money and making all these rules about glyphosate and GMOs and hybrid seeds and Terminator seeds and vaccines and hiding the fact that natural things will cure things. It's just like recently I was turned on to an herb that comes from Peru. It's called Chanca Piedra. Chanca Piedra, which means
Stonebreaker.
Stonebreaker, and I find this, and it's like hydrangea, which is a flower. It does the same thing. Hydrangea, a root, it turned into a capsule. These go in and dissolve stones. Okay, now how can I say that? oh, Dan, you're not a doctor. Well, I don't need to be a doctor because I have kidney stones from time to time. I know personally what the hell they are, and I know what works. So this is personal testimony. I'm not giving people medical advice. I'm simply telling them what happened to me. So I find out there's an herb. You drink lots of water, stop doing what you're not supposed to do, and drink this good pure water with this herb, and guess what? They dissolve. You know what's funny? I went to the store today, and the gal at the checkout was a lady. She's from Cuba, but she could speak English, so we had a conversation. And she noticed all this distilled water, and I was telling her how I had a stone, and she goes, yeah, I have some irritable bowel syndrome problems, and, you know, my doctor told me a big problem is all that espresso I drink and pork. Imagine that. Her doctor said, you need to give up that damn espresso and pork, and maybe you wouldn't have Crohn's disease. Now, where have we heard that before, Mike? Where have we heard the talk about that?
Leviticus.
Yeah, Leviticus. Exactly. So it was just funny. I laughed at her and I said, look, I don't mean to laugh. I said, but, you know, I understand he has a problem. So I told her about the piedra and hydrangea. And I said, you know, you could do this, make a tea, whatever. She goes, oh, my God, thank you, thank you, thank you. She goes, I have problems with gallbladder stones. I said, it'll take care of those stones, too. So, wow. You know, we had a great conversation. She was very thankful, and I took some information down that she gave me that she knew, and then I had her testimony about what the doctor said. Get away from the espresso, which is what? Coffee on steroids. That's what espresso is down here in South Florida. I had a little thimbleful. When I first got down here, somebody gave me a little tiny cup with espresso in it, and he said, here, Dan, try this. And I looked at it, and I said, what the hell is it? He said, it's espresso. So I gulped it down. He goes, Dan, you're supposed to sip that. And I found out why, because that stuff is like on steroids. I was bouncing off the ceiling after I drank that.
So I work with a Cuban guy who makes that, and he's morbidly obese, and his hands are shaking all the time. I'm like, buddy, maybe you should lay off the espresso.
Well, it's just, oh, my God. It's not rocket science, but it's fun to share with people, just like I did with that Cuban lady, you know, because she's hurting. You could tell it. And she was very so thankful. You know, I told her, I said, well, you know, this will help you out because I just found out about it. I'm taking it myself, and it's helping me tremendously. So, you know, but my anger as I walked out of the store is like, if I can find this out, dumbass me, if I can find this out, you're telling me universities, medical schools, professors, PhDs, and MDs can't figure this out? So what's the difference? Oh, it's called money. I make money putting stents in. I make money going in and cutting open kidneys and pulling stones out. I make money with lipsotripsy and the sound stuff that most of the time doesn't work anyway. I make money. I'm so sick of that, Mike. I'm so sick of that. I'm sick of people. Anybody, that everything's about the frickin' money.
You ever see a hospital bill from an overnight stay?
Oh.
I'm not talking about the doctor's fees. I'm not talking about the anesthesia and all the other things they charge you for. I'm talking about just the overnight stay in the hospital. It's more than a 4-star hotel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And these hospitals are owned by corporations who have fiduciary responsibility by law to generate a profit for the shareholders. Are you listening to this, people? These people that you go to for so-called healing have a responsibility to generate a profit for their shareholders. Are those the kind of people that you want poking and prodding at your body and pulling out a prescription pad?
Oops. I know. It's. I'm trying to think of the word. I think it's iatropic. Isn't that the word, iatropic? Yeah, I think that's it. Let me see here. Yeah, it's basically death by doctor, death by medical. They actually have a term for it. It comes from the Greek, it turns out. That's close to what their word for a physician was. Okay, so iatropic is death by doctor, okay, by either malpractice, the wrong drug, or the wrong dose of a drug, okay? And a case in point, again, my son, when he was in the hospital and I spent 30 days and I lived in the room with him, things worked out. He was in a section where I could do that. And the night that he went into diabetic shock because the nurse punched the wrong numbers into the feeding tube for his, they called it PTN, which is a protein texturized nutrition or something like that. It's a liquid with high proteins and nutrients in it because he couldn't eat. Okay, he had surgery and he couldn't eat. But because the nurse put the wrong numbers into the device, he ran out of TPN in the middle of the night and went into diabetic shock. And if I hadn't been there to see that the machine was giving out an alarm because nobody showed up, I had to go out and find a nurse, it's very possible he could have died that night. His blood sugar went down to 30-something, which is very, very close to where you're going to die. Okay? And it took an hour. It took an hour to get a bag of sugar water to his room to give him an IV to get his blood sugar up. It took an hour. An hour. And I spent that entire hour just telling him to calm down because he was starting to panic. He's a bit of a hypochondriac, and I just kept telling him, you've got to stay calm. You have to stay calm. Let your body save you. Your body knows what's going on. Just relax. The water's coming. The water's coming. The water's coming. So praise Yahweh, it didn't kill him, but that's how close it came. So, you know, my point is, where did we get this idea that nurses, doctors, and hospitals are the gods that will save us? Okay? Where did that come from? Who generates that sort of mentality? Where is the propaganda from that? Oh, wait a minute. The same people that own the media that make the movies are also most of your doctors and psychiatrists, and they own the pharmaceutical companies. And a lot of them are owners of the hospitals and turned them into businesses. It's all about
the money.
Hey,
Dan, that Jew couple that made the billions of dollars off of OxyContin, did they go to jail?
No. Billions. You're talking about the Canadian couple, right?
The Jew couple. Yeah, I don't consider them Americans or Canadians or they're Jews.
Oh, okay. Jews living in Canada then. How's that? I know who you're talking about. The Jewish couple, biggest producers of OxyContin, and how many deaths have been because of that opioid? We've got an opioid epidemic in this country. Does anybody care? Does anybody care about all these people? And, you know, we interviewed Dr. Gifford. He's got a way to eliminate opioid addiction. It's very non-intrusive. It's not expensive. Basically, put a patch on. And it can almost instantly stop your craving for opioids. That guy should be on the front page of Time magazine. He most certainly should be in the American Journal of Medicine. Nobody's heard about it.
Nope.
Instead, we hear in the evening news, we have more deaths due to drug overdoses. And we have but you got a solution out there. But, wait a minute, it would cut into the Jewish profits. I'm sorry.
And
sorry
it would make
I brought
the Jews
up.
Look bad. It would make the Jews look bad. So the Jews that own the TV and radio stations and the newspapers, they're not going to make their fellow Jew look bad. And what about the Jews that own the Fiji Water Company? What about the Jews that also, the same Jewish couple, that own the pomegranate juice company? They went in and bribed the government of the nation of Fiji and got themselves a sweetheart deal that puts the people of Fiji in a slave labor scenario so that they can extract that natural resource that belongs to the people of Fiji and sell these, you know, $6 and $7 bottles of water, the Jews don't even let the Fiji workers drink any of it while they're extracting it from the aquifers. Does this surprise anybody? And while we're drinking our Fiji water and our pomegranate juice martinis, while these poor little brown people are dying and slaving to make these Jews billionaires, are we the haters? People accuse us on this program of being haters. We're the ones who are sticking up for the poor and the oppressed around the world. And all we're trying to tell you is who the adversary is in all of these scenarios, all of the wars, all of the wars. As Mrs. Rothschild said, none of these wars would happen unless my sons wanted them. They brag about it. Wake up. And then what do they say we are, Dan? We're anti-Semitic. So they try to pass laws that say we're not allowed to tell the truth.
Oh, yeah.
When our people wake up, Dan, I'm telling you, there will be no place for them to hide.
That's what Scripture says. They're going to look for rocks to hide under and ask that the mountainside or the rocks would cover them up and hide them away from the wrath of the people. And these lying preachers like Hagee, there's another verse that covers them that says, when that day comes, their own parents will help to hunt them down. Their own parents will realize that they are liars and deceivers, leading the sheep to the slaughter. The sheep are dying by the millions, and they got us running around in circles chasing after our own tails with all this propaganda and other BS. All it takes is the sons of Yahweh, the people of the Most High, to say enough is enough. Just like John Mark was talking about, like you're saying, all it takes is our guys to get together and say enough is enough. Lose the fear. Lose the fear. So... All right, buddy.
Great speaking with you. No, I'm just I'm tired of it. I'm sick of working for corporate America. I'm sick of lining the pockets of people who hate us. I'm sick of being, you know, I mean, even if I just go to see what the weather is on the Weather Channel. I mean, I have to see these interracial couples on all the commercials. I get my cell phone bill. And what is it? The most beautiful blonde girl I've ever seen in my life with something that looks like a gorilla standing next to her.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they made this guy the most hideous thing you could possibly imagine in the most ethnic outfit possible. And I wrote them back. I said, if you ever send me another bill that has an interracial couple on it, again, I am canceling my service. Of course, I'm not going to get a response, but I will. What the, I don't even want a cell phone. Why do I even have one?
Yeah. Well, like I said, I took the cable TV out and everything else. It's been a couple of years ago now, completely. You know, the few things I did watch on it were, it just got to be such an annoyance, and the bill was ridiculous. And besides that, I have a thing against AT&T. I really do. I got tired of their bullshit. So it was the greatest day on earth when I called him up and said, take your junk out of here, okay? I don't want it. And you know what? I haven't missed it at all. I haven't missed it at all. It's actually kind of liberating not to watch that piece of garbage because all it does is create fear and anxiety. That's all it's good for. Fear and anxiety, and while it's propagandizing you. How the hell do people think they're going to have their brains work if they fill their heads full of the garbage coming across that tube? How? The Bible talks about to be careful about what enters your eyes and ears. It's right there in Scripture. Be careful about what comes into your eyes and ears. Why? Because it has an effect on you.
The mind has no firewall.
Exactly. And you're letting Satan's kids have absolute total access to your brain, your emotions, your thought processes, and worst of all, you're allowing them to have access to your children, even down to 3, 4, 5 years old. You're letting Satan have a go at your children.
When I was in Texas, I'll tell you one more thing, and I know you got to go. I dated this woman in Texas for a while. She was a good woman, I thought. And then we're riding in her car, and her little kids are in the back. And they said, "Mommy, put the radio on." Within 10 seconds of turning the radio on, of course it was rap, they knew every single one of the words, 50% of which were filthy. Now, this was the daughter of a pastor. And she let her kids listen to that stuff. And I said, you don't let your kids use the S word in common speech out on the street or in your own home. Do you hear the filth that they're saying? Well, but it's a song, she said. And this is a woman I found out that was married to a good man. She was married to a good man, but she felt unfulfilled.
Oh, Lord. Oh, my God. Unfulfilled. Oh, what does that mean? That's almost like the pursuit of happiness that they say is in the Constitution.
Exactly.
What the hell does pursuit of happiness mean? It doesn't mean anything. It was supposed to be property. We should have brought that up with John Mark on here. He needs to make sure Mr. Doolittle knows that. He may already know it, but he needs to know the original Constitution didn't say a damn thing about pursuit of happiness. That's bullshit. It's life, liberty,
and property.
This is
how the founders got together. This is how the founders got together.
Yeah.
We just assume we see these faces of Washington and Jefferson, and you know, we hear about Thomas Paine and Sam Adams and all these guys. But what we don't understand is they didn't know each other. They weren't cousins. You know, they all met and said, "Hey, you know what? We better do something. We're gonna all hang together, or we're gonna hang separately."
Yeah,
that's what we're doing right now, except we're using electronic means to do it.
Well, he said, actually, what they said, we might hang separately, or no, we might hang all together, but we will certainly hang separately. So if we get together, we have a chance to win. But if we don't get together, we have no chance of winning. They'll just pick us apart. They'll pick us off one by one. But okay, but we do have a chance of winning as a group. And that's the hardest thing to get our people to understand. First of all, the seriousness of the hour and the fact that all it takes is a group of us to get together and say enough is enough. Okay? Who are we? We are the sons of the Most High. We are, not these other people.
Nope.
These morons in government are not, most of them are not of his people. Why are we thinking we need their permission for anything? Why?
We don't.
Okay, it's a mental construct. That's what the propaganda and all these damn flat screens are all about. It's the image of the beast creating a false mental construct. Okay, a construct that says we can't do anything unless they give us permission. It's a mental construct, okay?
You know what the average person thinks, especially a man? They walk around thinking, but if I do this, I'll lose my job. Well, I'm sorry. You'd have to find your own food. Maybe you'd have to get a generator and hook it up to your house heaven forbid, you'd have to have some oil lamps or some candles in your house. I mean, you're not going to exert the will to be free and free your children from this prison planet because you're afraid you're going to lose your job, which is nothing more than a vehicle for putting Federal Reserve notes electronically in some bank account that they could wipe out at any time anyway. I let my kids be slaves because I was too afraid I was going to lose my shekels.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and better yet is that I was going to lose my job to make Jews rich so they can go sit out and party on their yachts and go down to the bank and draw out a couple thousand dollars to blow in an afternoon while you're slaving away in the factories, in the mills, for your $15 an hour job. It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
While they rape our daughters.
Well, while they're doing all kinds of things. I mean, you know, we've only seen the tip of the iceberg of what these criminals have done, by the way, folks. I hope you understand that. They have not released. In fact, they just said something the other day that 90-some percent of what's been going on might not ever be released. So you're only getting the tip of the iceberg of what these degenerates have been doing. Because you'd probably drop over with a heart attack if you knew all the dirty deeds that these people have done. To your children, by the way. You folks out there that have missing children and missing adults sometimes that go into these different things, get trapped, and they get taken away. Okay? That's what they're doing to innocent people. What does Yahweh say about your nation? When you have not avenged innocent blood, it's cursed. Do you like living under a curse, folks? How does it feel? You want to lift the curse? Then come on, guys, let's get together, sharpen those swords, and let's take care of business. You have to vindicate. You have to avenge the innocent blood. You have to bring justice on this earth. You want to lift the curse? Then we have to get out there and do what we were put here to do. There's no other way.
Does anybody doubt that this is what's happening? Let me give you an example. Somebody reminded me of this. Eldridge Cleaver, who was a black hero, a freedom fighter in the so-called civil rights movement, admitted in his own book that he used to rape white women because it was an act of insurrection against the white man and his civilization.
Mm-hmm.
He was elected to Congress.
Yeah. Well, now you got the
elected to Congress.
Yeah. Well, that's why there's no solution within the system. It's broke. It's beyond fixing. Okay. Anybody out there who thinks this system can be fixed by Trump or anybody else, you're just lunatic. You're a lunatic. It's broke. It's completely broke. It's only the Roman general solution is the only thing left. Sorry. Ancient Rome, all the way through history. It's not just Rome, but that's the one most people have read about. The generals got together with the men-at-arms and took care of saving the republic, or whatever form of government, doesn't matter, saving mm-hmm. their people, okay? Because at that time, Rome was still Roman. It was still white. So saving the republic meant saving the Roman republic, meaning the white race and their empire that they had built, because the thieves and the crooks and criminals were about ready to lose it. And we're at the same spot. Okay, we're going down the tubes. We're going down the tubes. So when are the soldiers going to be ready to go? That's the question. That's the big question everybody wants to know. When are the men who still know how to be men? When are the men who know how to bring justice about on this earth? When are they going to stand up? When are they going to stop kowtowing to the misfits? When are they going to stop worrying about the shekels in their pocket that buy them off, that make them whores? Because that's what whores do, right? They sell out for money. That's what our politicians are. They're whores. The pastors, they're whores. The county commissioners are whores. The professors in the universities are whores. Okay? I can't tell you how many people at university levels have told me, off to the side, of course, of all the corruption, and they know the fact that the history they're teaching is wrong and all this other stuff is wrong, but I would lose my tenure. Oh, I would never be published if I spoke out. Even Stephen Collins, the biblical archaeologist in his book, says that he doesn't understand why the true Israelites are not known, because academia knows this. He goes, academia knows that what I'm writing about is true. So the big question is, well, Mr. Collins, who is stopping academia from telling us about it? That's the only fault that Mr. Collins has. He doesn't identify the Jew. Okay, the Jew and their shekels, the same people that murdered Christ, the same people that brag about it to this day, as in Sarah Silverman. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Brag about murdering the Messiah and hopes that he comes back so she can do it again. And yet there's not one charge against her. Not one charge, not one preacher has said anything about the Jew Silverman and what she said about Christ. So where are the preachers? Where are the men of Yahweh out there that everybody goes to church, think they're going to hear the truth from that prostitute up there behind the pulpit? Not going to happen, folks. Not going to happen.
I'm saying, do all of the stupid Christianites from the churches, the non-churches in America, do they know that there are children shows, just like Sesame Street, but in Israel, where they joke around by taking a monkey puppet and nailing it to a cross and laughing about how they're crucifying it?
Oh, yeah.
These animals, they spit on people. They spit on nuns in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv who come out of churches. They spit on priests. This is the people that they worship.
Yep. Well, I think we'll wrap it up for tonight, bud, and tomorrow's another day. But this was a really good program. John Mark is a phenomenal individual, and I hope we can get Kurt Doolittle on for an interview one of these days, too. Still trying to get a hold of the Florida Maquis and have him come on, because I think there's a synergy in what we're all talking about. It fits. It fits very, very well. And I think the timing is perfect, too. The timing is because we are right at the edge of the cliff. We really are. I don't know who in the world can't see it right now, but we're really, really close. So, but anyway, any final comments there, buddy, before we take off?
No, as usual, this was the most professional and informative program that I've been a part of. This was just, not because of me. You've been doing this for 20 years, and this was just so well run and put together. There was a, higher power intervening on this. This message has got to get out.
Well, here's the beautiful part of it. Not a single second of this program was scripted. Nothing was scripted, okay? Your being here on the program happened at the last minute because of the coincidence of the phone calls and everything else. So, that's the part that I enjoy the most. It's the leading of the Spirit between all of us, okay? It's all generated simultaneously. It's, what do they call it, extemporaneous, off the cuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is the greatest thing of all. So, yeah, I think it was a phenomenal call. I got really good feelings about this. I really do. This whole propertarianism and how well it fits into everything we teach, and it's something people can get a hold of, because the Jew has done his damage to anything that's associated with Scripture or what they call Christianity. Most people won't even look at it. Won't even look at it. But propertarianism, it's not. It's coming from a different direction, but it's teaching the same message, and that's the part I really like. So, but anyway, I'm going to let you go, Mike, and say thank you, buddy, for being part of this, and for all the listeners out there and those that will listen later on. Bless your heart and keep up the good work. And by the way, again, I'll say it: you decide to run, you let me know. I'm in your camp.
Sir.
I'll do whatever it takes to get you elected. Or make you commander. If it turns out to be a military solution, same thing. Okay.
I'll be the guy raking the latrine while all the young guys are out doing the fighting. But I'm appreciate you, Daniel. Thank you, sir.
Not a problem. All right, I'm going to go ahead and mute you then, Mike. All right, ladies and gentlemen, again, I think it was a great call, so we want to thank everybody that stayed with us. These are long calls, but there's a lot of good information in here. Certainly covet the prayers for Michael and Jimmy up there. Hope he gets out of the YouTube jail soon. Just amazing what these damn censors are doing to us. Keep John Mark and Kurt Doolittle and their great work with getting this propertarian message out there. Florida Maquis and the different people like that and their great work. a lot of fighters. We do have fighters, so it's not like we don't. We have plenty of people now starting to get into the trench and understand this is warfare. We're in a war, folks. You got to start thinking like warriors. This isn't just play acting. This is not some damn Call of War video game here. Real people are dying. This is serious. This is a war. And this innocent blood has not been avenged. That's our job. That's what we were put here for. When are we going to do it? When is it going to enter your mind and your psyche and your soul that you were put here for something more than getting a new car or a bigger flat screen TV or a bigger house? In the big scheme of things, those don't mean a damn thing. You can't take it with you. You came into this world naked, and you will leave it naked. You will carry nothing from this world with you except your deeds. Think about that. When you stand in front of the Father, the greatest gift that He could ever give you, it's called life. He gave you the gift of life. And what you do with that life is your gift back to the Father. What are you going to give Him back, folks? What did you do with the gift of life that He gave you? Piss it away, sucking up to the Jew and his shekels? Or did you stand shoulder to shoulder with others of our same race and say, enough is enough? Something to think about. Race matters, folks, or the Jew wouldn't spend so much time and money trying to get you to think it doesn't. Just like the monarchies, they wouldn't make fun of it if there wasn't power in it. Just like the name Yahweh in the Bible, took it out. Why? Because there's power in it. Calling Him by His name has power, and they know that. Time to wake up. Dear Heavenly Father, we give You the praise, glory, and honor that You and You alone deserve. We thank You for this opportunity to share with all of our brothers and sisters all over this earth. We thank You for the awakening that's coming into the souls of our young people, such as John Mark and the others that are putting out this wonderful material. We pray that that Holy Spirit will continue to wash over our people to bring about that Ezekiel 37 army. That vast and mighty army of true sons and daughters of the Most High that cannot be compromised. Radamanthine men at arms. Radamanthine women who support the men at arms. We ask Your forgiveness for our stumblings and our failures. We ask for good discernment as we're all swimming in a sea of lies at this time. We ask for courage. Spirit of courage, not a spirit of fear. And we'd ask most certainly, Father, that You would protect us from our enemies in these perilous times. And may Your coming be very, very soon. We ask this in Yahweh's precious name. Hallelujah.